WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Chumbawamba concert here for a while. Peter Werby here with you, broadcasting live from Detroit. We're in our brand new studios here at WRIF in Detroit, Michigan, in the United States of America. And still a few little bugs on your old pal Pete's and to work out. So what was I was putting something on that was not the mic. I can't even begin to tell you how confusing all of this is. Anyways, that's my problem, not yours. I don't know, is it a problem? It's not a problem. Actually, it's an invitation. 313-298-WRIF gets you on the air to talk about the subjects of the day, what's going around your brain, and I'll answer with what's going around mine. And the reason I said we're broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan, United States of America, is because this broadcast through the World Wide Web goes all around the world, all through this country, and at 101 FM through the Detroit listening area. So please join us. And a variety of subjects are at hand. I'm going to bring up some of them. If you'd like to bring up yours, feel free. 313-298-WRIF. If you're far away and don't want to spend the dime, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I have a website. You can look at some of the issues I've raised there. It's peterwerby.com. P-E-T-E-R. That's the easy one. Peter Werby. W-E-R-B-E.com. And back from Disneyland is Rock Dizzy. Imagine that. They named an entire amusement park in Florida after my producer, Rof Dizzy, R-O-F Dizzy. So, and I'm sure he had a ball down there. If you want to get involved in a chat room, it's just too much here, man. I was just saying, we used to play LPs, and we had quarter-inch tape, and it was all there. Now I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 screens. Oh, yeah, there's a television, too, some football game going on. So there's 7 screens here winking at me, Sam. Anyways, you don't care about that. But a new little wrinkle we're going to have, and I may try to get in it myself, is this chat room. And Tom Hartman, who is a national broadcaster, has a syndicated program, an old pal of mine from when I used to broadcast on the IE America Radio Network, a couple of years ago, has said, in fact, he said I could set it up as my own site and have my name on it. But I said, I want to hitchhike, Tom Hartman, on your site. So when people go there for this two-hour Sunday broadcast, they'll also get a hold of your fine show, your books. He's been a guest on the Peter Werby Show any number of times as well. It's thomhartmann.com. And then you can go in there and you can discuss the show. Now, it's a little confusing. When you go to Tom's site, right in the middle at the top, it says chat room. And then you've got to, like, register twice. Yeah. But if you want to do it, it's right there. So, oh yeah, I forgot. We got our little, I don't even know. Let me see. Where the hell's the phone on this? Okay, there it is. That's cool. That's good we know that, because that's how we're going to run this show. And by the way, I got a little discombobbed, didn't I, right at the beginning of the show. So I'm going to, hold on, got to grab something here. Oh, this is a great mic. I'm foot away, you can still hear me. Anyways, that was Chumbawamba, most known for I Get Knocked Down, But I Get Up Again. And this is off a double CD called Show Business, Chumbawamba Live. And it also, on one CD, and then the second CD is Noam Chomsky, and his name of his side of the CD is Capital Rules, and it's from AK Press. I would highly recommend going and looking at some of their offerings, both book titles and also CDs here. It's akpress.org. Yeah, little print. akpress.org. All right. So what's going on? So I need some information first. I haven't figured out how to get my Yahoo News up on here, so we'll have to work on that in a little while. But I had this online edition of the New York Post up that said, as it says here, lefty filmmaker Michael Moore has been tipped he's going to win the People's Choice Award tonight. And that's these films where you and I actually get to vote on what is the best film. This is the first year these awards, which insiders have long suspected, notifies winners in advance, resorted to online voting instead of a Gallup poll. So is it over? Did Michael win? Or maybe, you know, like Mel Gibson? I don't know, because it was up to the public. And I'm sure, just like Michael was telling everybody, vote for me. See, I got a television here. I got to just look at it there. Anyways, maybe, nobody's ringing, so maybe nobody knows or anything like that. But let me see here. What should we talk about? What should we talk? All right, let's do this. Last week I was saying that we were, you know, one looks at the tsunami and its effects on the human family. Someone, where did I just see that? Someone was writing eloquently about that, that we've had a death in the family, the human family. And there's been bigger hits in some ways. There was 250,000 people lost not too many years ago in an earthquake in China. But somehow, particularly with the ability to see these you know, this footage of it all over the world and to be brought into it so closely. And also, and I think this is a part of it, there are Westerners that suffered as well. Sweden may have lost 5,000 people. Last week, I said that there may have been 5,000 Americans, and that was at one point what was feared, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. Americans, as people all over the world, particularly the citizenry, have opened their hearts for sure, and many of us have opened our pocketbooks as well. So all over, everywhere from my website to the WRIF website, it's WRIF.com, you can... the reason I'm hesitating is I just remember I forgot something else. But you can donate. And people, of course, will donate through charities that are the closest to them. So, in other words, there's different types and different approaches to this all. Now, Secretary of State Colin Powell, are they still talking about Condoleezza Rice becoming the Secretary of State? You wouldn't know it. Anyway, Secretary of State Colin Powell said today that the response to the Indian Ocean tsunami should be considered a long-term project that could extend far beyond the current efforts to provide immediate relief to survivors. Well, much of what people suffered you know, is, of course, has to be addressed by the wealthier countries, and they're doing it. The chintzy little first offering that Bush made until he really got tremendous criticism all around the globe. Remember, he was going to make $15 million. He probably could pull that out of his pocket or go say, Dad, can I have $15 million to donate? Actually, he donated $10,000. Here's this ultra-wealthy man. What's her name? Bullock. Sandra, yeah. Sandra Bullock, the actress. She donated $1 million. Bush got more money than her, right? That whole family. They made all this money off of wars and everything like that. Anyways, now Bush has made a $350 million pledge, and the largest single promise of aid is not from us. Not from, and this is us again. This is the American taxpayer. And rather than destroying Iraq you know, then paying to rebuild it, this hopefully is going directly to help people. And so still, though, this $350 million is on the chintzy side. Because if you start looking at percentage of gross national product, not only does Australia, way lead in absolute dollars, pledging $764 million, but also leads in terms of percentage of gross national product as well. But, you know, there's, as always, sort of a dark side to this. Because, for one thing, where is this money coming from? I mean, the debt, the American debt is, of course, growing and growing thanks to this tax cut to Bush's wealthy buddies. But it's ballooning. Bush has made up this whole lie that Social Security is in trouble. And then in order to get these Social Security private investment accounts, we're going to have to borrow hundreds of billions more. So, you know, we're running on empty, folks. I mean, this debt is all owned by foreign banks now. I mean, China owns it, Japan owns it, European banks own it, and we have to pay this back. So a lot of our taxes are going to be going to pay for the interest. We're paying interest, so we're going to be paying Japanese and Chinese and British and French and Italian banks in order to loan us money. Money that never needed to be loaned if it wasn't for Bush's insane economic policies. But if you notice the footage, I've seen a little bit of this on TV. It's centered a lot on us. I mean, a lot on the suffering. But who is shown being the most magnanimous? Of course, it's the American Armed Forces, which on one hand is a lot better than seeing American troops, the aftermath of American troops dropping a 500-pound bomb mistakenly on a bunch of civilians or shooting and killing eight of them at a checkpoint. I mean, that's much preferable, obviously. But you got to remember that this economic system depends on this large transfer of wealth. I mean, it's twofold. One, it just the economic system itself. I mean, we work hard and don't get rewarded anywhere near the kind of work we do that produces the wealth that occurs in this country to make it the wealthiest country in the world. Most of that, particularly in the last generation, has only benefited the ruling class, the upper class, the elite, the power elite, whatever you want to call them, the boss class. That's one from like 100 years ago. I like that one. But in any event, there's another function where there is transfer as well. And that is, and you see this in the war economy that's been going on for two and three generations, at least for the last 60 years or so. And that is that the United States finds enemies, often phantom enemies, like the Soviet Union was a phantom enemy. It never intended to attack the United States. This has all come out since the Cold War, and never intended to attack Western Europe. So these trillions of dollars, literally, that was wasted on this Cold War confrontation with the Soviet Union did one thing, though. It stoked the economy, at least the war industry end of it, which, the common people. We paid for it and didn't get that much of it back. Well, the same thing's going to happen here if we make tsunami relief, which I don't have a lot of disagreements with. But again, it's going to who are going to get the contracts for this? Same people that are getting the contracts for destroying Iraq and then rebuilding Iraq. So it all is just a racket. In fact, almost once you get beyond the level of common people, it all turns out to be a racket, doesn't it? Well, I was looking at the Detroit News, too. What a pathetic rag. Anyways, here's a shot of an Indonesian village and a big headline. Where was God? See, at least it makes sense to be agnostic about all this. Like, who knows? Where was God? Maybe he looked away. Or he blinked. Or maybe he wasn't involved in the enterprise. You know, some people are sort of like deists, like a lot of our founding fathers were, that kind of thought that the supreme being shoved the world into existence. What do they call it now? Intelligent design, right? And then stepped aside and let it all happen. Why he did this, not quite clear. And if it's really like a more traditional view that a lot of people hold, that it's a present God or God that has presence in human affairs, since he's omniscient, seeing all, he sees everything that's going to happen. He knew this was going to happen. He must have. Or he's less of a God than has less powers than what people ascribe to him. So I don't even want to read all this. Why? It's understandable to be angry at God. Well, I wouldn't mess with this dude, right? He's a vengeful and wrathful God. You get mad at him, you could be in the hot room for eternity. So you don't want to do that. But let's see. God is punishing us is one answer. God is testing us. Well, I'm glad if that's the case that he's testing us with them rather than the other way around. I mean, that would be unfortunate for us. But hey, somebody's got to go and test. And fortunately, God's on our side. The earthquake and the tsunami were sent by God, but we don't know what the purpose was. That's number three. I mean, I can't believe that journalism like this exists. Well, I can. People will write anything. I can't believe that a major newspaper in the United States in 2005 prints such crap. Number four, I believe in God, but the supernatural had nothing to do with this tragedy. Now, that sounds a little more sensible. And number five, God doesn't exist. Such disasters are just forces of nature. Well, I would agree mostly with number five. But whatever. Let me see if that all I have. Let's see. Well, I haven't asked any questions. Good talk show hosts ask questions, but I don't have any questions to ask. You can just comment. 313-298-WRIF. I don't know how the hell to get my email here. That'll be interesting if I can figure this out. So I'm telling people to write to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and I don't know how to do it. All right, let me see. Doesn't any place here give you the damn time? It's got to be more than... Oh, it's 11:16. All right, five more minutes, and then you talk. So get on the phone, 313-298-WRIF. The absolute corruption of these gangsters in Washington and how they've corrupted other elements of society, mainly buying them off. I mean, it's all about money. It's all about looting, right? Looting the rest of the world, looting the middle class and the working class for Bush's rich pals in the upper classes. Now, this might not seem a lot, but get this. There's this guy named Armstrong Williams, a right-wing black talk show host. And he was paid by the Bush administration $250,000 to promote the No Child Left Behind law. So, I mean, they took $250,000 for this controversial bill and paid this guy to broadcast, A, and B, to write columns about this in the newspaper. And so let's see here. Fortunately, his column was canceled by Tribune Media Services. It says there's the statement, accepting compensation in any form from an entity that serves as a subject of his weekly newspaper columns creates, at the very least, the appearance of a conflict of interest. I mean, it's just out and out corruption. And this is what these guys are known for. And you get it, you know, so that's the low-level hustles. I mean, that comes right out of government. Okay, so you and I, when we get our checks and a third of it's gone, I mean, part of it, the big part, is going to the big guys, Bush's pals, because they know that they're going to get a front seat in the loot fest of the rest of us. But it trickles down to the low level as well. But it also takes place at the top. Bush, apparently, man, the guy comes and goes. We didn't even know. It was in Clinton Township yesterday. And as Bush concluded a week of campaigning to overhaul the nation's civil justice system on Friday. Now, get this. See, this is the language that these, even at the top, this is from the New York Times, that these august journalists, that they fall for they take as their premise the agenda of the right-wing Bush mob. So it says he wants to overhaul the nation's civil justice system. Well, that's not exactly what he's got in mind. Anyways, he urged swift congressional approval of legislation that would sharply limit the steadily growing number of lawsuits by workers and others who claim to have been injured from asbestos. Now, let me see. Where did that lady go to? Anyway, somewhere on this, Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, denounced the president's plan as inadequate and said the administration should instead focus on prohibiting the production and use of asbestos. I mean, these big polluters that put this stuff in our houses that had people mining it and what have you and ultimately lied about its dangers, they're crying because they're having to do great payouts. And Senator Murray said, I'm deeply troubled that the president spoke of ending liability for companies that have used asbestos without addressing the need to ban this deadly substance. She says the current asbestos liability crisis is not just a function of a high number of lawsuits. It's also a function of the deadly nature of asbestos and the long latency period for asbestos disease, which can be up to 40 years. And the same thing. And he starts inveighing against trial lawyers, and he wants to cut liability suits to $250,000. So say you settled out of court. I don't know if I can do the math on this. You could be harmed for life, and if you settle out of court for, or if you got the $250,000, that means you'd wind up with like $160,000. I mean, that's it, for pain and suffering. For being injured on the job, of which hundreds of workers die every year, thousands, tens of thousands are crippled because of the unwillingness of the government to enforce strictly safety laws and health regulations and what have you. But think deeply, dear friends, which is difficult because you actually have to do a lot of it yourself because you don't get it reported in articles like this. Like I looked through this Bush Calls for Change in Handling Asbestos Lawsuits, and I thought, is he going to mention Halliburton? Halliburton, remember that? That's the company that Dick Cheney was the CEO of and bought this Drexler Industries stupidly. I mean, this guy, you know, all these guys aren't very smart. They ruin everything that they get involved in. The most obvious thing now, the two most obvious things are A, the economy, and B, Iraq. But Halliburton then, through this owning Drexler, was faced with these thousands of asbestos claims. So Bush wants to intervene on the part of his buddy, actually the puppet master, the guy controlling the sock puppet, who still yearly gets money from all of this. From Halliburton. So the corruption in this right-wing machine. So, I mean, we don't have a government. We're ruled by this racket. It goes from the lowest, so you got this talk show host being given $250,000 to broadcast government propaganda. The whole idea of full disclosure, in other words, it would be like, if Gore had been reelected, if he hadn't been cheated out of the 2000 election, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I would have been, bashing Gore for not doing enough for us. But so Gore would have been reelected, and it would be like he paid me $250,000 to get on the air and promote his policies. They're corrupt. They're thoroughly corrupt. Anyways, all right, let's see if we can do this now, because I've got to take my little magic wand here. And all right, so I think I take line two. Let's see if this works and I get this fellow on the air. The reason I'm stumbling like this, folks, if you're just joining me, it's because we have a new system here and a new studio. All right, I'm Peter Werby. This is Night Call, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, this is Mike Gibson calling from Birmingham.
Hi, Mike.
I've called before. I just wanted to say, like, the whole tsunami thing. I was reading that article in the newspaper that you were reading earlier today or earlier tonight, and somebody was talking to me in the coffee shop in Royal Oak about how that the whole hurricane was God's will or something. Like, gee, what a nice God we have. Like, here are thousands and thousands of little babies and children get destroyed, and it's God's will. Oh, gee, what a nice God we have. Oh, and that's another thing.
Wait a minute, Mike. What else could it be? Unless he's lesser God. He can control everything. So,
right.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of figure.
And another thing is, like, I was watching a program earlier tonight where they're talking about what a destructive emotion jealousy is, like how jealousy is against God's will and everything. And yet, God is a jealous God. So, in other words, it's okay for him to be jealous, but it's not okay for human beings to be jealous of one another. So, the same rules that apply to us do not apply to him for some reason.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your call. Yeah, by the way, I'm surprised that Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell haven't, just like they did after 9-1-1 before they got on with the program, that they're not saying this is God's will. I mean, hey, mostly chewed up non-Christians, right? By the way, though, the Texas fundraising company, a Texas fundraising company, is suing the Christian Coalition for $87,000, adding to a long string of unpaid former employees and vendors. This is from John at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, if only a few people were suing the Christian Coalition to get paid, you might say that there is something unique about them or their situation. But when dozens and dozens of former employees, suppliers, Contractors and vendors, including Pat Robertson himself, all say that they have not been paid by the Christian Coalition. You can no longer dismiss this as a situation unique to one suit. So more corruption, you know, more hypocrisy. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just calling in regards to the asbestosis thing. I'm kind of outraged about the way that President Bush is dealing with this asbestosis. My father died of asbestosis, and I just the way that these companies pay out, it seems like they try to file bankruptcy first, and then they seem to they pay out very little money if they can at all.
Yeah, did
my
he?
Mother,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Stuck with all these,
bills
that have been built up from that.
You know, did he get much of a payout?
My mother?
Yeah.
No, not very much at all. She got maybe at the most right now $8,000.
Oh man.
And she's got probably maybe $160,000-$170,000 worth of bills right now. She's 75 years old.
Great. You know, there's a city in a mining city in Quebec province called Asbestos, Quebec, and you go through that town, which I did only once. Where in the middle of town, there's huge, like maybe 3 and 4 story high pilings of asbestos tailings, you know, the leftover from the millings of it. Bob, hey, down there in Toledo this weekend, the Marines had had maneuvers inside of the city. Did you catch much of that?
No, I transfer or I go from Toledo to Detroit every day. So basically, I go through Detroit more than I do Toledo.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you. It's a terrible story, and I don't think the people that were harmed by industry are ever going to get really what they deserve, which is great compensation. Thanks for calling Night Call. Appreciate it. I forgot I can do this, too. This is because now with our new system, at least, I can identify the callers in advance. So this is Shannon from Clarkston. Shannon, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi. Love your show, Peter.
Thank you, Shannon.
I listen to it every Sunday night, and I listen to you in the morning on 94.7.
We're not supposed to say other stations.
I know.
Okay.
Well, I'm a rebel.
That same program, by the way, will air at 1 a.m. Tonight.
Oh, okay.
On Eastern Time. Yeah, go ahead, Shannon. What's up?
Well, I'm going to the protest the inauguration. I'm
good.
Just wondering if you have any information on that.
Well, you can go to my website. Peter Werby, you know how to spell my last name?
W-E-R-B-E.
You got it. And it says, and I'm kind of looking through this pile of stuff here, I don't know locally yet what's going on. I know that on Thursday, January 20th, there's going to be kind of a counter-coronation ball that's going to be happening in the Detroit area. But there's tons of people that are going to be going, going to Washington to directly protest it. And
right.
There's been calls. Oh, wait a minute. I must be here somewhere. There's been calls for, I've been saying, cancel the inauguration. I mean, it's obscene.
I want to go to it and protest it, so I don't want them to cancel it.
Okay. Wait a minute. Here's just a shout out to David Rotz, who is in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And he's part of Campus Peace. You can go to campuspeaceaction.org, but it might just be for down there. But he says Campus Peace Action was started in the spring of 2003 at the University of Central Florida.
Right.
But it might be the kind of thing where you could email him.
Uh-huh.
Or somebody can call in from the Detroit area and say, if you want to go, if you want to hook up with people, because, you know, you got to figure out if you're going to go there by yourself, where are you going to stay? Because
yeah, well, my friend has an SUV. She was one of those evil people, so we're
cool.
Just sleeping that, I
yeah.
guess.
All right, well, that's okay. Well, then you go to, or you can go to unitedforpeace.org.
Mm-hmm.
Unitedforpeace.org. That's what's on my website. That'll save you a trip.
Right. Are you going?
I'm not going to go. I'm going to go to the, if I could, had any way to figure out how to access my email, I would give you the deal of where it is here in Detroit. But I'll do that next week, because that's still the Sunday before.
Right.
But I mean, for one thing, it's just absolutely obscene that it's going to cost $40 million. It's going to be the highest security in the history of the country.
Mm-hmm.
The upper price for tickets to for these parties, which includes lunch with Cheney and Bush, is $250,000. In other words, these corporate execs are going to roll out of their pocket that kind of money. Mm-hmm. And I'd say cancel it, take all the money and send it to the tsunami victim.
Well, yeah, it's sickening. It's sickening how much money he can spend on himself and his corporate friends. But, you know, people are, you know, have lost everything, have lost their families and all their possessions, and we have to scrape together money to send over there. I just think it's, you know, I don't know how he sleeps at night.
It's going to be the most repulsive display of pomp and wealth and militarism. And, of course, they always get the, you know, Republicans always get the absolute worst entertainment. So they're going to have Guy Hovis. Guy Hovis, H-O-V-I-S. He's a vocalist from Tupelo, Mississippi, who's performed on the Lawrence Welk Show. Well, I mean, what year is this? And he's going to sing John Ashcroft's song, Let the Eagles Soar. I think it's called When Eagles Soar. Yeah. It doesn't get much worse than that, does it?
No, it really doesn't.
All right. You know, check out some of these websites and also check my website, and I will have full information next week.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
All right. Thank you so much, Shannon. We'll be right back.
Your opinion matters. Call 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call and more of your calls coming up.
I wish I knew what to do with myself.
I wish my boss would give me a raise.
I wish there was no...
Man, I'm getting way too old for this. Being a star, well, no one respects it. I'm only out at night. I mean, they wish for stuff 24 hours a day.
I wish I could go on vacation somewhere tropical and not be broke when I get back.
I wish ice cream cones.
Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on a sec. Who just wished for the tropical vacation?
Me?
Hey, you're in luck. I happen to know some people over at FunJet Vacations. Just book by January 20th to get in on the Have More Fun sale and get an all-inclusive vacation for less than you'd expect. And you get to frolic at places like Occidental's luxury hotels and resorts in Aruba, Cancun, Riviera Maya, Cozumel, Punta Cana, Puerto Plata, and Vallarta. Anyway, consider it a favor.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Anything's possible.
I wish I could marry my parole officer.
Nope, that's it. I'm officially burned out.
Subject to limited availability and change with or without notice. See the FunJet Bill of Rights for details.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet. With the Riffs, dine online. You are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. The Riff presents your opportunity to save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Bellacino's Pizza and Grinders with 17 locations. Go to www.bellacinos.com to find a Bellacino's near you. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you'd better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings for Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, enjoy one of the nation's five best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946.
Log on today and save with Detroit's rock station at WRIF.com.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're in a brand new WRIF studios. All the screens are working. I knock on plastic and aluminum here. I'm saying everything is going great. Looking at six screens, and oh, hey, there's the television, too. Seinfeld's on. Maybe I'll turn up the volume or something like that. Phew. Raf Dizzy is our phone screener and producer for tonight, and please join us. We're talking about the tsunami, and this, where did this go? This article said, where was God? And then somebody writes, it's understandable to be angry at God. And I don't know. It's not in my consciousness about what God does or doesn't, so no big item to me, but... Secretary of State Colin Powell talking about spending an enormous amount, an ongoing amount, in relief One of the things that, well, one of the reasons that so many injuries occurred and deaths were that the poor are always forced, in particularly in Asian countries, onto the worst land and oftentimes in countries below, lands that are at or below sea level. Also, poor building structures and what have you. Hey, so that's one of our elements. We're also talking about just how thoroughly corrupt Bushco is, you know, like Bush Incorporated Bushco, including now wanting to limit the suffering of asbestos sufferers. Maybe some of them are faking. Yeah, I don't know, but a lot aren't. You heard that one caller from Toledo. How about this? A Walmart worker showed a photo of himself only wearing a sack. A 65-year-old Walmart greeter has been fired for greeting customers with a computer-generated photograph of himself wearing nothing but a Walmart sack. Dean Wooten was fired in September from his job as a greeter at the Muscatine Walmart store where he'd worked for 7 years. He was accused of greeting customers with a picture of himself in which he appeared to be naked except for a carefully placed company sack. He told customers that Walmart was cutting back on expenses and that the sack represented the new employee uniform. I mean, I don't know how he expected to keep his job, but the guy's pretty cool. After some customers complained, in other words, you know, what do they think? Snitches. What do they call people like that? Rat finks. A supervisor told Wooten not to display the pictures, but he did anyways. He applied for unemployment benefits, but was denied. Then because he ruled that, quote, a reasonable person would know that the act of showing a naked body wearing a Walmart sack would not be good for the employer's business. I don't know. I mean, I've never been in a Walmart, so don't know, but we shall see. All right. Now let's look at this. I'm going to have to figure out a way to get your emails. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And so, actually, I would ask my producer, Roth Dizzy, who was last week was at Disneyland in Florida, whether or not we are streaming. I sure hope we are. All right. It's Maurice from Detroit. Maurice, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing excellent. Thank you.
You know, I really feel sorry for them people over there that got hit with the tsunami.
Sure, bad.
But it's one thing this country always does.
What?
The money for programs, people for poverty, there's always no money there. Yet, they always find money to send overseas for a disaster. You know, I feel sorry for them people. You got people walking around the White House, 3 blocks from the White House, home. You got people living in cardboard boxes, charity stars at home. Our infrastructure is falling down. Okay?
Yep. I said yes. Yeah.
And one more thing, I got a hire for Condoleezza Rice. Come look me up when you come to Detroit. Bye.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Let's see. It's Matt from Ortonville. Matt, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. It's Funky. How you doing? Oh,
get funky.
Yeah, you got.
Sorry, you should have given you gave your name away. Sorry.
You're gonna come after me now.
Good, good.
Hey, congratulations on your new digs. I'm sure you're have them scored away in no time. And
all right, get through the niceties. Go ahead.
Oh, give me a break. Hey, I'm just trying to be cordial.
You are.
All right. Hey, one of the things that with the tsunami, it seems to bring out the best people and the worst of people. And regretfully, some of the things I've read. With some of these children that have lost their parents, you know, it's a shame because they've either been sodomized or sold into some type of child trade. And I think it's, you know, incredibly important that, you know, we support them in any way possible, whether it be financially. Even in the Detroit area, you know, there's been televised three doctors that have left, you know, active practices to go there. To
yeah, it's incredible the way people have opened their hearts, and often when they're able, their wallets follow. One thing, yeah, there has been all this exploitation and injury of children, but one of the things that we ought to be real aware of, and it's no secret, that the exploitation of children as far as going too far as to selling them into prostitution, using them as slaves to produce things like rugs and all, has been ongoing. This is probably just shining the spotlight on it, eh?
much so. And one of the unique things, I mean, this may seem like it's some type of an anomaly, but as far as my understanding is, the tectonic plates, you know, essentially they separate in the sea and then come back together, and that's what causes a huge tidal wave. I'm surprised we haven't seen this on the West Coast. I mean, you know, with California.
Well, it's even possible on the East Coast. I mean, every once in a while. I mean, when you're like talking on your phone, I'm talking to this microphone and everything like that, and the whole world seems to be directly in front of us. But if you think about it, I mean, we are actually on this orb as whirling through space with this envelope of an atmosphere that allows us to live, and all beneath us is this huge molten center that every once in a while, up towards the upper levels, slips this plate. It doesn't seem real. It's not. Anyways, in general, pardon me, it sounds like something out of The Day After. There's been enormous storms all over the West, and particularly in Southern California, Alaska, warming. It's absolutely, you know, terrifying in many ways. Hey, Funky, we didn't argue. Great. Talk to you soon. I just kind of hung up on him just before we could. I'm sure he had something ready. Here is Terry from Toledo. Terry, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
I was involved in the demonstrations against the Marines here in Toledo this weekend.
Well, tell us, though, about that, because I believe it was you that sent me the email about it. So this isn't, it wasn't against the Marines. It was against the Marines carrying out maneuvers.
You're right. I'm so sorry. I misspoke.
Go ahead.
It was against the Marines continuing to prepare for war. Let's put it that way. The Marines were, it's a weapons company, a reserve weapons company that's headquartered a few miles outside of town here. About 130 of our best and brightest at the city of Toledo. From Friday night, beginning about 9 p.m. till noon today, there was a vigil at the apparent headquarters of this in downtown Toledo on Friday night. There were about 30 demonstrators, and then yesterday about 20 of us followed a couple of Marine platoons as they wended their way through the streets. They were using their firing blanks. They were creeping along, testing out hand signals. I assume at night they're probably using their night vision technology, that sort of thing. But yes, our purpose and the thrust of our protest activity was to emphasize that we don't want any further deployment. We want to end immediately the Iraq invasion and occupation, as well as that of Afghanistan. We used through a PA system, we played Bruce Springsteen's rendition of War. And also through megaphones, we made statements to the troops. We were literally across the street from them most of the time, within 75 to 100 feet.
Well, now, I guess what was the most startling thing to me that an urban city was used as a backdrop for like future Fallujahs. And that they were firing blanks. I read that in the Toledo Blade.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I did a little research, and while we think it's relatively unprecedented, in 1999 there was a much larger scale Marine Corps invasion and maneuver in Oakland under the aegis of Governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown, and it involved a 4-day occupation of part of the city. By troops who were conducting blank fire drills, as well as a very intense, mock attack on a hospital complex. And also there have been urban maneuvers in the late 90s in Chicago and Jacksonville. And the thing that, I consider myself to not be overly paranoid, but walking, tramping around the snow yesterday, I kept thinking, this isn't what Baghdad's like at any month of the year with 6 to 12 inches of snow and 30-degree temperatures. What in the hell are they doing in a first-world city making believe that it's some sort of enemy that they're fighting?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Terry. In Toledo, when the Marines were carrying out these mock maneuvers, firing blanks, and here are you and other anti-war demonstrators, what was the reaction of the Marines and what was the reaction of the Toledo police?
Well, the Toledo police were, a few of them were sort of tracking us around, driving around the block repeatedly, that sort of thing, yelling at the elderly fellow that was driving our little sound car and yelling at him that he was impeding traffic. And at one point, pulling him over and instructing him, I raced over and caught the end of this, that under Toledo's ice cream truck law, you cannot use a sound truck in motion. You have to be at a standing stop as you play your music, which I thought was kind of interesting because I've never heard of that ordinance being enforced against ice cream trucks who are driving through neighborhoods, you know, teasing children in August. But anyway, there were a couple of snide remarks from some of the police. And in fact, Friday night, even though this whole drill occurred in some sort of vague coordination with the local police, there were no permits issued, and the Marines made a big point of saying that they wanted this to be sort of real-world conditions, so they didn't want a cordoned-off, special, emptied-out part of downtown.
Were they calling you militants or insurgents or anything?
No, and they weren't pointing their guns at us.
Oh, that's good.
They were kind of studiously, of course, trying to act as though we weren't there, and interestingly, a lot of them made eye contact sort of on the sly when the sergeant had already passed or that sort of thing. But Friday night, a former Army MP who had done a tour in Iraq, who was leaving work from downtown, drove past the assembly. Now, understand, it's like, you know, demonstrators on one side of the street and garbed Marines with weapons on the other. So it's very interesting to measure the honking and the approval or disapproval or the catcalls being yelled out windows. This one dude stopped and talked to the group for quite a while, 15 or 20 minutes, about how deplorable the war is.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings me to an observation that is kind of buried beneath the point we were trying to make in the media as well as to the community, which is that the fastest-growing, cutting-edge part of the anti-war movement is military and military families. And,
wow.
I mean, there's really a source of information as well as, I think, increasingly angry and hopefully courageous people to be mined and located in the military in uniform.
Well, I think so. I'm going to talk about that after our midnight break. But, Terry, thanks for giving us all the information. Are you folks organized at the point where you have, like, a website people can read more about this? I'm sure they can go to the ToledoBlade.com.
There's an article in today's Blade about the demos. Our website is actually a Yahoo News Group's site. It's the Northwest Ohio Peace Coalition. We co-sponsored it with the Veterans for Peace. That would be NWPC at Yahoo Groups.
This is going to be too long.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right, Terry, thanks so much for the report. I actually think the idea of, and some people have made this point. In fact, I don't know if I can find this one real quickly. Someone sent in. In fact, this I'll comment on this when you're off the air because it kind of fits into another subject as well. So, Terry, thanks for calling in with that report from Toledo, Ohio.
Thank you for your interest.
Appreciate it. Bye now. Let's see now. I got too many things up. I finally kind of figured this out, right? I wanted to get back to some of this mail. Yeah, here, Ruth writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, which I finally figured out how to open on this screen. My son, who is in 10th grade, loves to listen to Peter's show on Sunday evenings. However, I'm trying to find another time when he can listen to the show. Is there any way to download onto a CD so he can listen to his CD player in his bedroom? Please let me know about other options than listening live from 12 a.m. to 2 a.m. Exactly, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Thank you for any help you can give us. Well, if you go to radiopower.org, who also streams the show along with WRIF.com, they replay the show twice on Mondays. Once during, I think, a morning, like, again, sorry, I can't remember, 9 a.m. to noon, I think, and then in the evening as well. And then you can go to whiterosesociety.org, whiterosesociety.org, named after underground resistance to the Nazis, and then it's archived there. All of this is at my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. Go to the little microphone on the left side of it, and you can get all the info on this. All right, but let me see. Wasn't there another thing? Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks to Barb and Bob listening in Royal Oak, Michigan. The People's Choice Awards, hosted by Jason Alexander and Malcolm Jamal Warner, were presented at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium and broadcast live on CBS. The awards covered 38 film, television, and music categories. The nominations were determined by editors at Entertainment Weekly. Da, 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 da. The winners were determined by internet voting. The complete list of winners for Best Motion Picture, the drum roll please, Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. So Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 wins the People's Choice Award. The Best Drama Motion Picture, The Passion of the Christ. So go figure. Maybe those were the two constituencies that were... mobilized. All right, let me see if I can get back to my other screen here, and we'll go. Where are we going next? Okay. It is Kim from Dearborn Heights, Michigan. Kim, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thanks for your show. I'm getting tired in the mornings on Monday, but it's worth it.
Uh-oh.
Every Sunday. Thank you.
Thanks.
I just wanted to give you some information on the counter coronation event.
Okay, good.
Okay, it's Thursday the 20th. It's going to be at UAW Local 22, which is Michigan and Clark.
Okay.
And 5:30 to 6:30, we've got a soup supper going, soup, bread, coffee. 6:30 to 7, the big coronation. The king will come in with his minions, bodyguards, billionaires, puppeteers. It's going to be very good. And then from 7 to 9, move into kind of a more serious, the subjects speak. People get to talk to the king and drive him out of there.
Well, I will be there.
Great.
I wanted to go to Washington because I was at the first coronation in 2000. But can't make it this time, unfortunately.
None of us can afford it this time.
Well, things have gotten worse for a lot of us, that's for sure.
This deal's only $1, and if you're unemployed, come on in for free.
All right, Kim, and I have it on my website calendar as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for putting it on. I'm looking forward to doing it.
Good enough.
And I'll remind people next Sunday, because that'll be the Sunday before the January 20th.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Just mentioning, by the way, radiopower.org, the webmaster, Shelby, writes in, Peter, I've come to the conclusion that our leaders are actually preparing for Armageddon, the second coming of Jesus. Toledo maneuvers BS. They know sooner or later the lower 48 states will be part of their holy death orgy. Wow, Shelby. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of nutballs, not just right-wingers, but nutball right-wingers that are in... You know, heavily involved in Bush Cove. So I wouldn't, nothing would surprise me. Ralph Dizzy, which call should I take next? He's in an, oh, God, this works so incredibly. Here is, if I can get my little mouse going here, here's Galen from Berkeley, Michigan. Galen, hi, you're on the air.
Hey. I first wanted to say something about the asbestos deal.
Sure.
I think that it's absolutely despicable that, like, the American public is that depraved, or, like, deprived, well, and depraved, that, like,
yeah.
They'd be willing to do, like, almost anything for money, as in, like, look at me, I have asbestos, like, personal damage, regardless of whether or not they actually do, just, like, bringing up a lawsuit, like, either for the possibility of getting some money out of it, or just... for the attention or...
Well, wait. I mean, why... This is not a particularly big issue. I mean, if you take everything under the sun, anything you ever heard of from the homeless, to to tsunami relief, to welfare, to anything. There's always going to be an extraordinarily small percentage of people that are going to take advantage of it. But to highlight that, as opposed to the probably 99% of people that have actually suffered severe damage from asbestos, or really are homeless, or really are poor, or really did sustain damage from the tsunami, I mean, it's pretty cynical.
I think it's that it's just the 1% that or so that does do that that bothers me. And
well, but it's almost built in. Just like with all human activity, there is the potential for accident. I mean, you and I know whether we're walking. I mean, to think about the particular activities: walking, flying, taking a train, using a circular saw, playing racquetball, whatever. Built into every one of those is a possibility of accident. I mean, even walking, you can trip on a curb. I mean, actually, my dog pulled me a couple of years ago, pulled me over, and cut my forehead. I mean, who would have thought that would happen? But the point being is that to say that there is, that there's going to be this small percentage of people taking advantage of a particular situation is almost to just say the obvious. So I don't see much sense in focusing on that. All right, I got to do a break. Thanks for calling in. And do we have an open line? Yeah, we do. So give us a call, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Janine Heilman with Cosmetic Surgery Associates and Mike Heilman of Hair Loss Treatment Centers with a word on honesty.
You've heard and seen the offer on radio and TV.
You're eligible for a free body makeover. We're conducting a test and you could qualify. You'll get a full head of hair free.
Here's the part you don't hear.
Babe spilled Freud and Hair Replacement Emporium. What you need done?
I'm calling about the free body makeover and a free hair transplant for my husband.
Look, baby, you're too beautiful for the free test.
Too beautiful, but...
You don't qualify, but we got a great deal for you on liposuction. We take it from your rear and put it over here.
Remember, nothing in life is free.
At Cosmetic Surgery Associates and Hair Loss Treatment Centers, our professional staff will give you the highest quality care.
And you get the results you're looking for at a fair, honest price.
Don't trust just anyone with your body, appearance, or health.
Tell them about our free consultation.
Not funny, Mike.
Call Cosmetic Surgery Associates, 1-800-NEW-IMAGE. That's 1-800-NEW-IMAGE. Or Hair Loss Treatment Centers, 1-800-I-WANT-HAIR. That's 1-800-I-WANT-HAIR.
This is Night Call. The Riff Phone-In Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. 1 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be playing a couple of interviews. I think they're both pretty interesting. One is about the Bush scam. Bushko's attempt to destroy Social Security, one of the most successful programs that is a... that there is, and frightening people. There's a Bush aide has argued for Social Security cuts. A White House email argues the case for cutting Social Security, says that they ought to convince the public the system is heading for an iceberg. This is absolutely untrue. But you've heard it so much now, you probably think, man, if I'm going to retire in 2 years, I'm not going to have any money. And even if I'm 20 years old, in 45 years, it's going to be in trouble. Well, even in 45 years, according to all accounts from the government accounting organization, Well, not office, rather. It's not going to be in trouble. I think that it's somewhere along the line. Our guest will tell us that. I'll play that first at 1 a.m. We'll say that it by, what is it, by 2052, that the system will only be able to make 80% of the scheduled payments. So what that means is it's not going to be very difficult to get the funding for it. It's like, you know, Bush makes it sound like in 5 years, it's all going to be gone and grandma's going to be without her Social Security. I mean, this is just the kind of fear-mongering. Now, think about it. These are the guys that scared the crap out of most of you. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. Probably not most of the people listening to Night Call, because most of you knew better, that there were no weapons of mass destruction. That Condoleezza Rice, this liar that's going to wind up to be the Secretary of State. Of course, she replaces a liar. I guess that makes sense. Remember Colin Powell showing all those photographs and charts and stuff like that, telling us that Saddam Hussein had the capacity to nuke the U.S. And it was Rice's little phrase picked up by the horrid Dick Cheney that would said maybe the smoking gun. You know, people say, where's the evidence that the smoking gun will be a mushroom cloud? Now, every one of them knew there was no weapons of mass destruction. And those of us that took the time, and most of you who listened to Night Call, knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. But the ordinary person who doesn't delve into this deeply, and if you don't, unfortunately, see, you're trusting of the media, the corporate media in some cases, the right-wing media in other cases. And oftentimes on these big issues, they're just as bad. I mean, NBC is just as bad as Fox. The Detroit News is just as bad as like the Wall Street Journal or something like that. But anyways, they're doing the same thing. These are the same people. So this is the boy that cried wolf. So Bushko cried wolf last time, got us into this hideous war that is turning out to just be about torture and death squads, destruction of cities, killing of innocent civilians, the increasing American casualties, the vast number of Iraqi casualties. These are the guys that are now trying to tell us that Social Security is a problem, right? So it ain't. Representative Charles Rangel of New York says the White House email shows the strategy is to instill panic. Of course. I mean, they figure out. They sold us this bill of goods about weapons of mass destruction, and just now people are beginning to turn against the war. So they figure, oh, we can sell these people anything. But if you really want to worry, here from the Washington Post, the Bush administration has signaled that it will propose changing the formula that sets initial Social Security benefit levels, cutting promised benefits by nearly a third in the coming decades. So depending on how old you are, I mean, if you're like 60-something, well, you probably get full benefits. You're 50, you're 40, you're 30, you're 20, you're 13 or 14, and I know that there's a number of you 13 and 14-year-olds that are up listening to this, even though you got to get up for school at 7 a.m., but I love you all. I used to do that, too. I used to be under the covers with these little radios listening to rock and roll when I was a kid. But anyway, I don't think they had any talk shows in or something. But anyway, they're going to cut benefits. They're saying, this is the problem. This is the problem. And there's this whole thing about price indexing and all that. But essentially, what Bushko wants to do is turn over billions and billions of dollars in fees to their buddies on Wall Street, because they would administer all these accounts. And, well, I'm not even going to go through all the arguments. We're going to have those on at 1 a.m. Kevin, listening in St. Mary's, Ohio, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Bush could solve the Social Security problem. See, even Kevin, who is opposing what Bush is saying, he uses that language, uses the Bush lie as a premise for his letter. And I'm sorry, Kevin, I mean, I'm not being critical of you because I'm reading this because I think it's you're right on the money. Bush could solve the Social Security problem, which isn't a problem, once and for all if he removed the cap on salaries. And here's the deal. We pay payroll tax, and we pay Social Security and Medicare tax, right? If you earn over $87,500 a year, that's the limit. So if you're making $37 million a year, you're not paying payroll tax on it. You don't make, you stop paying after 87.5. I mean, you could raise it way up. I mean, 87.5 has just turned into like a middle class income. So, I mean, you can make it like $150,000 or something like that. But extending the cap, beyond that would allow, billions of dollars of revenue from the people that can most afford it. Instead of the way it's, things are going now, from the people that can least afford it. See, this is the Bushko equation. It's Robin Hood economics in reverse. It's you rob the poor and give to the rich, the middle class and the working class. I mean, to them, we're poor, right? So that's what I would suggest. Let me just read this one more email. I'll get back to your calls. Ed writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I enjoy your show very much, but I have noticed many times that when I set my volume control to listen to you talking, that it's hard to hear the callers and the guest, and also the guests that you're interviewing after the show. This is not a new problem caused by the new location. It's been like this for months. Is that true? Wow, that's terrible. Debbie writes in from Boston, your stream is crystal clear, kudos to WRI. That's all right, okay, I got to get my little cursor going here. And let's see, we'll go to Greg in Auburn Hills. Greg, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter Werby.
Hi.
You know, what I'm concerned about is the price of gas. I'm from Detroit, and it sucks. We have to walk around this world, and we have to live in this world and determine ourselves upon the price of gas from other people.
Yeah.
You know, and they do this from other parts of the world, not from our world.
Well, there's some. There's a lot of oil drilled in the United States. But, yeah, we have great dependence on foreign oil. Well, if Bushko is all about oil, pardon me, that's why we're in Iraq, essentially. That's why we want to. That's why we're in Saudi Arabia. That's why we give hundreds of billions of dollars to Israel. It's ultimately all about oil, and Bushko is oil. And so, as long as these gangsters are in power, we're going to continue that. And they have a vested interest, just like we, as the ordinary people, have a vested interest in prices being low. Bushko and his pals have it the opposite. They want it to be as high as possible because the more gas costs, the more money they make. If we were serious about understanding the destructive nature of oil, both in terms of foreign policy, oil means war. This was a war for oil. So all these people that have died have been all about this. We're in the Middle East for one and only one reason, and that's to secure oil and oil reserves. And secondly, of understanding the, which many of us do, the poisonous nature of the internal combustion engine and the pollution it does at every level. When it's drilled, when it's shipped, when it's refined, when it's burned, when it's discarded. And so what we would do, rather than saying we've already wasted, I mean, money's nothing compared to the lives we've wasted in Iraq, we've spent $200 billion of our taxpayer dollars. And if we had a bit of sense, I mean, common people do, Bush and them guys don't, we would have used that money to go on a crash program to get us off oil addiction, to get us off fossil fuels, to get rid of oil, to get rid of nukes, to get all of the stuff that threatens ecological web of the world. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see, is there anyone there off without a name? That's okay. You don't have to give a name. Make up a name or something like that. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. The legendary Mr. Positive. How are you?
You're a legend in your own mind.
No, I'm not. Trust me.
Yeah.
Hey, question. Your vista on, or your perspective on the truth and your knowledge and where you get your information. How do you know it's absolute, and how do you know if it's the truth, and how do you know it's not being tendentious or biased in nature?
Wow, man. I used to have these conversations sitting around the dorm at like 1:30 a.m., like, wow, man. What is reality? I mean, that's a good question, though, because what we want to look at, I mean, how do we know what truth is? And I don't know. I mean, it's difficult because what I say is absolutely true, in my terms. Someone else sees it 180 degree opposite, right?
But why is that?
Well, I think, you can, to those who do not see truth as I see it, you can only ascribe negative qualities to it. They're not looking at reality. Their premises are distorted by their psychology. I think that you can look at a couple of things. What works best for the planet overall, which then will say, what works best for human beings. And in terms of human association, what qualities do we see within that that works best for people? We know that small groups, cooperation, the qualities of love and sharing are what wind up with the happiest people. We know that enormous anonymous groupings of people in a world dominated by a petrochemical, nuclear technology and civilization doesn't work well at all. We know if we put people into extreme competitive situations where it might work well at certain times for fun, football or individual sports, but if we base a society on it, you wind up with a distrust among people so that there's not cooperation, there's not love and sharing. So I use those as the basis, and also the philosophy of existentialism, which means that humans define themselves, that they don't have any inherent quality per se. I mean, this is all pretty difficult. I mean, I think there is a sociobiology that's based around love and cooperation, but in terms of what ethical choices one makes, it's they kind of elevate the little simple rule about do unto others as you would have them to do unto you, to talk about universal choosing. So each time one chooses in the world, you're making a universal choice. I don't know. There you go. Hey, Philosophy 101. How did I do?
You did pretty well, but are you saying that truth is malleable? And would it be a contradistinction of what truth is by definition? If truth is absolute.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on how you cut it. I may have used this example before. The anthropologist goes to an Amazonian village. This is like the dorms at 1:30 a.m. Anyways, an anthropologist goes to an Amazonian village. And he's told by the people there that their shaman, their priest, or what insultingly is called a witch doctor, can fly. And so all the people in the village take this psychedelic substance, as some cultures in that region do, as well as others in other parts of the world. They're all sitting around. There's a lot of chanting. There's drumming. And it goes on for about 3 or 4 hours, and then everyone goes to sleep. So in the morning, the villagers come to the anthropologist and say, "See?" And he says, "See what?" Say, "Well, did you see the shaman rise up and fly around the village?" And he says, "The guy never left the ground." And they laugh at him. So what is reality? Okay, I knew that would stump you. Thank you, Mr. Formidable, or whatever your name is. All right, thank you very much. Let's see, our next caller. People aren't giving their names. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
The truth? He can't handle the truth.
You're right.
you ever read the comic strip, Girls Before Swine?
No.
One of the strips, they were collecting fish, and he had a pool full or a fish tank full of piranha, and he says, "What do you call them?" "I call them the truth. You can't handle the truth."
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Open line.
I called about your guy, Tom.
Wait, just one second. I just wanted to say that people often get frustrated that there's open lines at 313-298-WRIF, although if 100 of you try it, only one will get through. Go ahead, sorry.
I called about your guy, Tom Hartman. I listen to his show whenever I can during the day. He's on an old country station, WSDF.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a funny name for a country station.
It is.
I think Students for a Democratic Society.
Right. One thing, I listen to WSDS. They play, it's kind of fascinating, they play country oldies.
And
I'm thinking, what kind of market is there for country oldies? I mean, I'm not talking about 60s and 70s. I'm talking about 40s and 50s. Anyway, go ahead.
It's a weird demographic because there's a lot of people my age in their 30s and 40s that, you know, they listen to Goober and the Peas and the Cramps and, you know, bands like that. So the rockabilly in the country, that's really cool for them.
Yeah. All right.
And
well,
I grew up listening to it.
All right. But let's not promote other stations. My boss will kill me.
Yeah. But it also points out the fact that back in the 50s and the late 50s and the early 40s, country was very left-wing. You know, there were songs about the Leuven Brothers song, the Great Atomic Bomb, which was an anti-war song.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the best-known figure of all, Woody Guthrie.
Woody Guthrie, yeah. Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash and his wife.
June Carter.
June Carter, yeah, were both against the Iraq War.
Both against the Vietnam War, and it cost them.
Wow. And also, by the way, the Republicans at that nauseating spectacle in New York, they had some event to honor Johnny Cash, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people that went and protested, said, no cash for the Republicans was their slogan back in August.
Republicans. Your guy Tom Hartman on that show was doing a lot of stuff about the oil companies went through in the last couple months in the area where the tsunami occurred, the original earthquake,
mm-hmm.
doing seismic testing.
Wow, he's getting into, he can join Art Bell.
Well, it makes sense.
You can't do that much. I mean, we may have ruined the planet, but I don't think we can go that deeply into it, to tell you the truth. And you're not on the, people should know, by the way, you can go to tomhartman.com, and right now there's a chat line going, which I have no idea right now how to access, where you can chat with people about this program. Tom Hartman said I could do it. You're not on that, are you?
No, I'm not online at all, but I do like listening to his show because he has the Workers' Independent News Organization, which is about the only news organization I've heard that consistently gives you, you know, union news and news of labor struggles and labor strife from around the country.
When Tom Hartman and I were on the IE America Radio Network, we had wins. It's Workers' Independent News Service. You can Google that and look it up. Workers' Independent News Service. And it was like all of a sudden you're on a different planet because all of the news here is corporate oriented, and they would give a totally different perspective. All right, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Let's go to our friends in Ann Arbor. It's Ken calling from the area around the University of Michigan. Hi, Ken. Peter Werby, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, and regards with the tsunami.
Yeah.
I'm not thoroughly convinced it was an act of God.
You think it was an act of God?
I'm not thoroughly convinced that it was an act of God.
Oh, okay.
I think it's in the realm of possibility that maybe some country did some sort of underwater weapons test or some deal. Out of the realm of possibility, my eye.
Huh.
And also, I've heard of China doing nothing to support these people in people in their region.
Really? That's cold.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty much my hypothesis, potentially.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Ken. Thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Bob from Waterford, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Two callers ago, he's talking about some truth. Tell the listeners if you know how much it cost for the Clinton inauguration when he got reelected in 96.
I don't know. I probably something obscene, and it was paid for by the same corporate bandits. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just under $42 million. So, you know, roughly $2 million more than Bush's. Not saying Bush's is... great, because that's just way too much money, too. But actually, $12 million for Bush's inauguration is being paid by the taxpayers. In 96, $15 million of Clinton's inauguration was paid by the taxpayers.
Well, that's good to know. And because one of the things I always fear, and one of the things that comes up, is that people begin to think I'm some Democratic Party partisan. And anybody that listened to this show during the Clinton and Gore years knows that I was on their case. I wasn't on their case because... Clinton was getting BJs from some intern, although that was pretty reprehensible just because of the power relations involved. but because of their policy. And I don't remember whether or not I mentioned that. It would be something I would mention, because really what's happening with these coronations, and I would include Clinton in that if that's accurate, and I'll take your word for it that it is, it allows corporate influence, and that's the word's pretty weak for government. I mean, it's a racket, and we just were fortunate enough during the Clinton and Gore years to have an economy that wasn't in debt, wasn't fighting a major war, and was willing to at least give some crumbs to us little folks.
Right. I got one other point too for you, Peter.
Sure.
Now, whether you're against the Iraq war or not, we're there. We're trying to set up a democratic government. And everybody's kind of saying, you know, well, why is it taking so long? Why is it taking so long? After World War II, it took us 7 years to establish a democratic government in Germany. We were in control in Germany for 7 years. We ran that country.
Wait. We're talking about this Nazi regime that attacked all of Europe. We're talking about this nation in Asia that attacked us. There's no reason we ever went into Iraq other than to establish U.S. Domination there. This ain't about democracy. It's about oil. And I'm wondering, and I always ask people, Bob, that how many Americans are you willing to expend for this effort?
Well, it depends. You say it's about oil. I disagree about the oil issue.
Well, all right. But then right now we've got over 1,350 American dead. There's 10,000 hideously wounded American soldiers, mostly young people. There's 100,000 Iraqis dead. We're doing things that are clearly war crimes, that are like the destruction of whole cities like Fallujah. There's all this torture is coming out. Iraqi civilians are being killed at a rapid rate just in the last couple of days. Did I mention that in this? In this torture is going. So we illegally invade this country. We because of Bush, we allow Americans to perpetrate torture, and now the Pentagon is talking about using death squads to assassinate people that they don't like. That's democracy, eh?
Well, that's the battle for democracy. It's a part of war, whether you want to accept it or not. And
except that it has no basis in international law. It has no real necessity for our country. Now, look at it. I mean, some of the stuff that was going on at Guantanamo, that these people strapped to the floor, in what they called the hell room. They wrapped people in Israeli flags. These are Muslims. Now, where did they get Israeli flags? I got an idea, Jim. Let's go get an Israeli flag somewhere, and we'll take these Muslims and really humiliate them. I wonder what Israel thinks about that. They were taunted by female interrogators who rubbed their bodies against them in sexual suggestive ways, left alone in refrigerated cells for hours with deafening music blaring in their ears. And those are the people that got off easy. There's any number of, they had these things where they pushed people's heads into tubs of water. I mean, the most despicable tortures that you expect from the worst torture state is now because of Bush Co. being allowed to be perpetrated. And you got to remember, when you take off the rules, you're always going to get people that say, yeah, I want to do that. Because there's not too many of us that are going to say, go beat that guy until he tells us what we want to know. Give him an enema. There's a number, this is coming out more and more, that enemas were utilized to make people talk. This is what the fascists did in Italy. They were big in giving people enemas and then letting them soil themselves. What kind of human being, what kind of American committed to democratic ideals says, well, here's a good job, I'm going to give somebody an enema? Or what kind of human being takes somebody who's handcuffed to a bunk and just starts smashing the crap out of them, or six dogs on them? And all this stuff, you know what bunch of commies reported all this? The FBI. So, I mean, and you don't destroy cities in a country where people don't agree with you with 500-pound bombs and then talk about you're installing democracy.
You're right. Maybe we...
Are you there? Okay. I don't know, Bob. I don't hear you. So I'm going to have to say goodbye. Sorry about that. Oh, let me look at my time. All right. We got time for another caller. It's J.D. from LaSalle, Michigan. J.D., hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions to pose to you, sir.
Yeah.
What would you do about Islamic militancy in the world? You know, when they're confronting their neighbors, killing them if they don't convert.
Where is this going on?
Well, in at least 15 countries that I'm aware of, and I can name them all off for you.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Excuse me, I didn't get a chance to ask my second question.
Go ahead. What would I do about Islamic militancy? Go ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, what are your proposals for dealing with Islamic militancy and fascism?
Well, that's one question or two?
Second question is, what is your proposition for substituting petroleum in products that are not related to gasoline? Because there are at least... as far as I'm aware, several thousand products, plastics for one, which I'm sure you're surrounded by in your studio there,
mm-hmm.
that are derived directly from petroleum, for which there is no organic or synthetic substitute.
Well, that could be. But I certainly the biggest use of oil is fuel. But anyway, the first one I think is more important. But you know, we could take, like I said, if we wouldn't have gone on this fool's errand to Iraq that has done so much damage, we would have had another $200 billion where maybe we could have enacted a crash program that could have investigated. What do I propose to deal with Islamic militancy? Well, I mean, I have some answers. But it would be actually a lot better if the rich suits that rule this world would figure that out. Because in many ways, they are they're the cause of it. First and foremost, the West ought to leave the Middle East. I mean, can you imagine if Middle Eastern countries or Asian countries or even European countries were lodged all over our part of the world where they were, they had large numbers of troop concentrations, where they were continually fighting wars, where foreign nations were funding governments in that area to maintain them in power, everything from a country like Israel that's extremely hated in the region to Saudi Arabia that is this royalist dictatorship. So first and foremost would be to get out of the Middle East immediately and totally. And if there's issues there that they're going to solve and resolve among themselves, it comes about because of this 150-year invasion and exploitation and colonialism that the West has perpetrated in the Middle East. I mean, first by Europe and increasingly by the United States. The United States has caused most of the problems in the Middle East. It overthrew the government of Iran in 1954. It installed, you used the word fascist, a fascist royalist government that ruled then for 25 years and resulted. The results of that, we had this compliant dictator and ruler in Iran, but that set the stage for the Iranian government now. The United States supported Saddam Hussein, gave him weapons of mass destruction, gave him intelligence to fight Iran, boosted up Saddam Hussein. So all these policies come back to bite us in the butt eventually. So my idea to how we deal with the Islamic militants is exactly that. Disengage from these people so we're not fighting this war that began with the Crusades 1,000 years ago. How does that sound?
That sounds absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, I thought I was going to convince you, but go ahead. Why is that ridiculous?
Well, first of all, you know that it was the... the breadth and extent of your ignorance is staggering and mind-boggling.
Well, now you've gotten through the insults. Go ahead. The extent of your ignorance and lack of knowledge is mind-boggling, my friend.
First of all, if it were for the West, the Arab countries wouldn't even be able to get their oil out of the ground.
Well, you know what? But don't you understand that that's the whole reason that the West was in there in the first place? They weren't very interested in that. They were dominated by Britain, which, among other things, used poison gas on them in the early 1920s under Winston Churchill. They carved up these countries into, according to Western interests. They weren't these big countries like Iraq and Lebanon and what have you. These are all creatures of of Western imperialism.
You are such a fool.
Oh, well, good. All you can do, you're an idiot, and all you can do is call names, so goodbye. You know, isn't that pathetic? You try to have a discussion, and, you know, that's the level. All right. We'll be right back. Guys like that are so pathetic.
This is the Riff Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Hi, it's Trudy with David Hall from Rock Financial. Now, David, it seems like Rock Financial has been growing all year long. You're hiring, I hear.
You are, and you put it perfectly. We are growing our company. We're looking for the best of the best. We were voted the number 13 best place to work in America and the number one best place to work in Metro Detroit. We're pretty proud of it. And at Rock Financial, our mortgage experts work hard. Benefits are outstanding. Sky's the limit. And our team members are our best resource. We're continuing to grow and add great new folks every day.
So you have to train them, of course, to be mortgage experts.
Extensive paid training to all new mortgage experts. We want to make sure that our experts are educated. They go through 5 weeks up front, then weekly training every week as a mortgage expert.
Wow, only the USMC is a more grueling program, huh?
We're looking for energetic, enthusiastic, committed, and most of all, passionate people, because we're very passionate about our business.
More information at
rockfinancialcareers.com
or 866-JOBS-200.
Join Rock Financial at their sales career open house Tuesday, January 11th. Events will be held both in the Livonia and Troy locations. You must register to attend at rockfinancial.com and click on careers. Registration and the event are free.
The bus pulled into the local high school. I had a few questions. Who hates to get punished by their teachers for talking too much in class? Well, you shouldn't talk in class, but who hates to get punished by their parents for talking too much on your wireless phone? Well, relax, because Sprint got rid of ugly overages.
Protect your family from ugly overages. Now, 100 extra minutes only cost $5. Other plans charge at least $35, and unlimited Sprint PCS to PCS calling is included.
So, kids, start talking.
Sprint PCS. Now that's better.
Offer ends February 13th, 2005. Requires two-year agreement per line and preferred credit. Taxes and Sprint surcharges excluded. Activation and termination fees apply. See store for details.
Could be down in the tropics with my toes in the sand. Need an Apple vacation. Frosty drink in my hand. I got to get me to the Sunshine Blues.
Don't be blue. The Apple Vacations Winter Relief Sale is on. Escape to Punta Cana for 7 nights at the award-winning Iberostar Bavaro All-Suite Resort from just $12.99. Or enjoy a full week in Jamaica at the Five Golden Apples Club Hotel Rio Negril from just $13.99. Both include air, all meals, unlimited drinks, water sports, and more. Call the travel professionals at Passageways Travel at 888-532-0420. That's Passageways Travel, 888-532-0420. Hurry, best flights and hotels going fast.
I got the candy to the Sunshine Blues.
Prices per person based on double occupancy, including charter air on Ryan or USA 3000 for select dates. $2.50 per segment, September 11 security fee and other taxes and fees up to $105 not included. Restrictions apply.
More Night Call with Peter Werby next on the Rim.
Snow Cross Action is coming to Michigan. The U.S. Air Force presents
the Arctic Catch Snow Cross at the Speedway.
Saturday and Sunday, January 22nd and 23rd at Michigan International Speedway.
See
the best snow cross pilots on the planet. Launching Levi Lavalle, Sean Crapo, Blair, Superman, Morgan, and more.
As they battle it out in the snow for all the dough.
Gates open each day at 9 a.m.
with hot Snow Cross Action at 9:30.
For advance tickets to the Arctic Catch Snow Cross at the Speedway, go to mispeedway.com or call 800-354-1010. Tickets also available at the gate on race day. Don't miss this snow flying, sled scraping, snowmobile racing showdown. VIP and motorhome parking available. The U.S. Air Force presents
the Arctic Catch Snow Cross at the Speedway.
Brought to you by Parts Unlimited and Castle Sales. Be a part of the action at MIS.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh.
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you naughty darling?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. And we're going to be airing a couple of interviews I did earlier in the week at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Randy's listening in Tampa, Florida. He or she, I don't know which. Peter, you're coming in wonderful down here in the state of Florida, where unfortunately for us, we have two bushes running the land. Let's see. If you could again give us your plans for Inauguration Day, or should I say the National Day of Mourning? Well, what I'll do, Randy, I'll send you this information from the Florida people, like tomorrow or something like that. So thanks for writing in. Appreciate that. All right, well, we got to do a little on-screen stuff here. And we haven't had anyone. I mean, we had a couple callers from Toledo, but we haven't had any callers from around the country. A lot of emails. Appreciate that. And I wonder, I haven't been to the Tom Hartman chat room, tomhartman.com. Go to chat room, and people are using Tom. I'm hitchhiking on Tom's site to use that as a chat room during this segment of the program. I'll say it again. Some of you might have missed it. But Tom is such a wonderful guy, such a great broadcaster. He has a nationally syndicated program, unfortunately not available here in Detroit. But anyway, he said I could say Peter Werby chat room. And I said, no, man, it's yours. And when people go there, they'll also see your stuff as well. So that's why it's a little confusing. But you go to tomhartman.com, and then right in the middle it says chat room, and then you got to sign in twice. Kind of a nuisance immediately, or initially, rather, but then it's real cool to do. And I wanted to see whether I could do it during the show, but not yet. We've got all new facilities, looking at all these screens. It's going to take me a bit to get used to it all. Here's Dave in Taylor, Michigan. Hey, Dave, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Good morning, Pete. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for calling.
Just wondering about Iraq. Those elections are going to be holding on the 30th.
Right.
Is it going to be strictly a mail-in vote?
No, actually, people, Iraqis, Iraqi-Americans, Chaldean Iraqis, and people like that are able to vote in the Detroit area.
Hmm.
Well, that would be mail-in, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Now that we think of it. No, I don't know how the hell they're going to have polling places, given that what happens there with all that bombing. I don't know if I'd want to walk up to a polling place, would you?
Well, they probably wouldn't be able to allow any drive-up traffic.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It's kind of funny that, they go through all this expense and military to hold an election, and aren't the Palestinians having elections with no problems?
I guess they did, yeah. There's not that kind of opposition internally, though.
It's kind of ridiculous in the spot we're in, and, you're well-read. How in the hell are we going to get out of there?
I don't know. I mean, right now, like I said, maybe the people got us in there ought to be able, ought to figure out how to get us out. But in the meantime, maybe we could just leave. I was looking for something that these Sunni Muslims who were talking about boycotting the elections, they said they would participate if the United States would announce a timetable for withdrawal. And the United States said, no way. And the reason that the United States says no way is that Bush knows no matter what the election is or no matter what happens, the United States is going to be in there for years. And we're going to be taking casualties for years. We're going to be spending tens of billions of dollars for years. And so that there's they can't give any assurances like that.
Well, the only insurance is that we know that Bush has only got 4 years.
Yeah, well, yeah. Then, but, of course, they're grooming Michael. You know, Jeb Bush. We got Fredo in now from the Corleones.
I'm thinking it's Clinton's wife is probably the front runner.
Man, we got to be able to do a little better than Hillary versus Jeb, don't you think?
Well, I think that's probably what we're going to be stuck with.
Yeah, probably. Imagine that. And what is supposed to be the greatest democracy in the world, we're talking about what we're going to be stuck with. All right, Dan, thanks for calling. 313-298-WRIF. Appreciate it. Let's continue on to Marie, who's calling from Harrison Township.
Hello.
Hi.
I have several comments I'd like to make, but I'm going to just choose one topic that you're talking about. Earlier, you had someone call in, and it appeared to sound like he was a young man who may be beginning his career, and he said that perhaps even 1% of people who didn't have an issue with asbestos but were claiming to.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to say that I think the president saying that someone with asbestos has a frivolous lawsuit is an absolute absurd statement. First of all, anyone who is claiming to have that condition really goes through extensive testing, and you have to have absolute proof, and the lawsuit takes years and years and years, and in the interim, that person is suffering, not only that person, but the family members, and it's absolutely draining financially.
Well, Marie, why do I suspect that you didn't read about this, but this has happened in your life?
Because it has, and
yeah.
It's not asbestos, it's something else, but it's just as close to.
Yeah.
And the consequences is, it goes on forever and ever and ever. And pain and misery do not have an age to it. They don't have an address. And I just, sometimes I sit back and listen to people, and you can almost tell by their speech and their tone of voice and their arrogance. And sometimes it's an indication of their age. They're beginning their working career. And some gratitude should be given to people who have gotten them their college degree,
mm-hmm.
perhaps by being exposed. And if these people hadn't been exposed and through these terrible things, we wouldn't have the laws that we do have protecting them now.
Well, and they're not protecting them enough, and certainly the victims of industrial accidents and industrial poisoning aren't being compensated anywhere near enough. And the whole idea, talk about insult to injury. First off, we're talking about real and extensive injury in many cases in the workplace. And secondly, the insult is that people have to go to these lengths, leap through so many hoops to get a meager repayment, and which is impossible to repay people for the loss of their health. And here, Bush, representing essentially the corporations and corporate interests over the interests of injured workers, is making these remarks like imputing the honesty of so many people that have been hurt.
It's a re-injury to the injury, and quickly what you just said there, it's repeating what has already happened. And the hope of these major corporations is if we put you through the hoops long enough, you won't have to do anything because you're going to die anyway.
Sure.
And it's just, you know, another comment was made about the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful thing that people are compassionate enough to care about other humans, of what's going on around the world. There was something on TV the other night, and I don't know if it's okay for me to mention where it was.
Sure.
But it was on the Larry King Show, and it was absolutely, it was just a beautiful thing about people saying, did God cause this, so on and so forth. And in the end results, really what was said was, it's a human's opportunity to show compassion to another human. And you really don't have to go across the world to do that. And if people don't believe that, I can tell them where they can find the 54 traveling people who are participating in the McRus program in Macomb County.
In the what? I'm sorry.
In the McRus program. It's for the homeless.
Spell it maybe for me.
McRest.
McRest. Okay.
There's 54 people that travel all winter from church to church who are truly homeless. And there are 8 children in that 54. And certainly children don't have a choice of whether they're going to have a roof over their head or not.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the circumstances are, there are people that are truly homeless.
Marie, do you have access to the Internet?
I do.
Can you email me this information?
Of where they're at this week?
Well, just in general, I can kind of hook up with this. I can put a link on my website. It's at, you can just email to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all of this.
And thank you for listening.
All right. Well, that's what we want to hear. I mean, not the bad news, but people who begin from a point of compassion. Thank you so much, Marie. Appreciate it. Wow. I mean, think about those of us who aren't afflicted, the kind of luck, unfortunately, is as well, just often frequently luck. Here's Kirk from Howell. Kirk, it's Peter Werby at 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
Needs to be more of you and Michael Moore's out there. The society is just in a sad state of now.
But you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt you so quickly, Kirk, but you know, the country, if you take both the polls or even the voting statistic, is at best dead even. I mean, because of the media, because of the way these right-wingers have essentially made a coup d'etat of the major institutions of society, the institutions of government, the media, people like us feel like, gee, we're this tiny minority. Whereas even with the propaganda, the domination of right-wing propaganda, corporate propaganda, the control of all the major institutions by the right wing, there's still 50% of us that don't buy this guff.
No, I don't buy it either. I listen to your show, and I'm in the union myself. I work for the railroad, and our secretary treasurer, John Snow, I work for CSX. He was a former CEO of CSX.
Yeah, this is not the radio station, folks.
No, it's the CSX Railroad Transportation.
Yeah, go ahead.
Not the radio station.
All right.
He got a bonus of $68 million and plus a $2.5 million bonus for the rest of his life,
mm-hmm.
every year for the rest of his life. Now, that's corporate greed right there.
You know, I agree with you, and I'm not trying to one-up you, but it's beyond just greed. It is pathological greed, and here's why. Here's why. Let's say that somehow that we have the aspirations to be wealthy. I mean, I'd like to have, a lot more, but a considerable more. I don't know. I'd like to have more money than I currently have. Most of us listening probably have the same thing. If you had $68 million, there is absolutely no way you can spend it whatsoever. So most of these people that get these enormous sums, these CEOs that get these incredible salaries and what have you, it really is just a manner in which they can show the importance, the prominence of them themselves to their ultra rich upper class. Because what he could do, can you imagine this? I mean, that if someone said to you, Kirk, we're going to give you $7 million, I mean, you'd fall out of your chair, right? You wouldn't know what the hell to do with it, even. But so here's a guy that could have taken $60 million, and rather than getting that as a bonus, use it first off to raise the wages of the people that do hard work on the railway. Use a goodly sum of it to improve service and quality of the trains and all of that. And still, this greed head maneuvers to take this from from the public and the stockholder. I don't know why the stockholders put up with it.
No, I don't either. I'm a stockholder of Union Pacific Railroad, and they're currently back in the state of where they want to run the railroad properly. The railroad I work for now doesn't seem to want to run their railroad properly. In fact, they have unmanned remote control engines that they use in these industrial yards around Detroit, Toledo, and Cincinnati, all parts around the country, everywhere. Unmanned engines carrying hazardous waste from toxic chemicals that Dow Chemical uses to propane to anything you can think of is being moved by these unmanned vehicles or engines, locomotives, I should say.
It's amazing.
And the FRA authorized them after 2002. It just seems to be that Bush was in there, just happened to happen after the election of Bush. Just no coincidence.
It must be a coincidence.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kirk.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. A couple more callers. And, I forgot. I always kind of do this haphazardly. I always want to play the song we featured just a little bit of at the beginning of the hour. So we will do that. I think it just the Chumbawamba. Remember, that's the group that did I Get Knocked Down, But I Get Up Again. Remember that thing? They're a pretty interesting and very political band. And through there's this double CD with Chumbawamba Live, pardon me, and then Noam Chomsky, the social theorist, linguist. He talks on another CD. This is available from akpress.org, akpress.org. Show Business, that's the name of the Chumbawamba side of it. So I'll just do like the minute and a I'll do maybe a little bit. We'll see. Where are we going here? All right. Paul from Sterling Heights. Paul, Peter Werby, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
We don't always agree, but I wanted to run something by you. You were talking a little bit earlier about the Republican radio and their spin machine and the often-enough told fiction. There's something that I've noticed about it, and especially after reading a book by a guy named Lakoff called Moral Politics.
Yeah.
It's the wonderful use of language and the art of metaphor. It's making that fiction into a soundbite. For instance, were I to say I'm pro-life and you oppose me, metaphorically speaking, you'd be
anti. You'd be what?
You'd be pro-death.
Yeah, or anti-life.
Or the fact that the term tax relief suggests that taxes are a disease.
Yeah.
So to put a burr under the saddle of a couple of friends of mine who don't exactly agree with my politics, when the president came into Michigan campaigning for tort reform, I like to redefine it as saying he was actually campaigning for the welfare of insurance profits.
There you go.
Put the president together with welfare, and people get real sort of squirmy.
Yeah, most of that, Clinton's...
But it is welfare for... corporates, it's welfare for the insurance companies.
They always use this reform. I mean, Clinton did welfare reform, and essentially what it did was to kick millions of poor people off of welfare. Then most of them have never recovered very well. So it wasn't reform. You might say it's okay to do that, but reform makes it sound like something good is happening, because you want to reform things so that they're better. And so if he talks about Social Security reform or what have you, it ain't necessarily going to be good.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that relief, if you have a headache, you want headache relief.
There you go.
Tax relief makes taxes into a disease. It's a wonderful, artful use of metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like putting the president's campaign for tort reform, sort of redefining it as ensuring the welfare of insurance profits.
Well, remember George Orwell, mostly known for writing 1984?
Yeah.
He talked a lot about language and the way it could be used in a manipulative manner. And, as I say this, I'm sure that there's some people screaming at the radio, "That's just what you do, Werby!" But I try not to, but because I don't, I try not to invoke... phrases that on the face of them are empty, but yet have this great emotional and psychological power. That essentially is the way fascism works, because what it does is erect symbols for people to signal allegiance to, and then the language follows that.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the soundbite.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, thank you for that, Paul.
Good night.
Good night, and thank you very much. Let's talk to John from Monroe. John, hi, welcome. John is calling from the home of George Custer and Fermi too.
I get sick of hearing that.
You know what? I actually talked to I gave a live talk at the library down there. Really nice folks, and I said it's a pleasure to be here in the home of General George Custer. and Fermi 2, and I did the, you know, crossing your fingers for good luck stuff, and about half the audience booed. I went, whoa.
Go ahead. Well, first off, I'd like to say, I love your show. I've heard it a couple times. I'm a new listener.
Oh, welcome.
But I have a couple questions. I'm sure you talk about everything. I've heard you've been on the show for a long time. So
2 years.
I want to know what you think about the moon landing, if that was a hoax or if that's true or whatnot.
That's interesting. You know, it's been coming up more and more recently, and I see that in movies. You know, that I'll tell you, John, that is one of those things that I never paid much attention to. I guess, I assume, you're talking about the one in the 1960s, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Whether that was actually faked and it was done on a soundstage, I don't know. I took it for granted, and I guess I still take it for granted that it occurred. You don't think so?
You know, I'm kind of on the same page as everybody else. I mean, I take it for granted. I you know, you can only look into it so far. I mean, like a guy came on, how do you know what's the truth anymore or whatnot? I don't know. I'd be honest, I don't even have a view on it anymore. I just wanted to ask you what your opinion was on it, see what you had.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Do we have time for more? We do. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good.
There was a call about the Abu Ghraib, a couple of calls back. I was just curious. I remember when this happened, you had posted at your website some pretty disturbing pictures of, and what I remember was a rape picture.
Mm-hmm.
I never hear you talk about that. I mean, was I just dreaming, or is this true?
There were rape pictures?
Yeah, pictures of our soldiers raping Middle Eastern women.
You know, I hope that wasn't on mine, because there was a hoax that was perpetrated at the same time. There are, you know, we talked about this last week to some extent, because I had something on my site that turned out to be a hoax, something just kind of silly.
Okay.
I mean, it was in an Indiana newspaper, in Indianapolis newspaper. I thought it was true. But for a while, during the time of Abu Ghraib, there were all these photographs that showed women being raped and held down by men in uniform. And when you, and it turned out it was a hoax. It was actually porn photos. I hope that didn't get to my site, although
yes.
It may have.
Yes, it did. I remember it distinctively. It was on your site, but it wasn't on there for very long. It was on for like a day.
Well, then it was probably something that I checked on, because, you know, in the internet, it is easy to perpetrate hoaxes. There's so many things that come on, and one of the things that I appreciate, in fact, I think if it was there, all right, I'll say yes, it was there for a day. Probably someone said, hey, Peter, you've got some crap on there, you got to get it off.
Wow.
And so I will rectify things and also publicly say I was in error. Now, and whenever this happens, I always say, this is nothing you will ever get from a right-wing show, that the host will publicly say, I made a mistake, I had something there that was that I thought was you know, was the deal, but I was wrong. So I have no problem saying that I was wrong.
Except for Sean Hannity, he would always admit that he's wrong.
He does?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, all right. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave a couple of you hanging. Raf, I wish you would say sorry to those folks. Let me see, where are we here? Yeah. This is, I don't know if this is going to work. This is a little bit of that CD. I think it's going to go off right when we get to the longer song. But that's all right. This is about a minute and a half. This is Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba, I guess, is correct. Chumbawamba. They've actually got a great site, too. There's chumba.org. Chumba. Chumba.org and chumba.com. All right. Stay tuned for the interviews. Oh, yeah, they go through all this, don't they?
Let's go! Let's go!
Thank you. Werby. Peter will return with more Night Call in just a moment.
Immerse yourself in Chicago. Play all day, stay all night. Fly nonstop from Flint, and you're just 1 hour away from the best holiday shopping in the Midwest. Hit the Magnificent Mile, Water Tower Place, Oak Street, or State Street. Then take in the jazz scene. Stop at the museums and comedy clubs or snag tickets to the theater. ATA Connection has 6 low-fare flights every day. Use the cash you saved on your airfare to do, buy, experience more in the Windy City. Zipping in and out for business, the nonstop flight from Flint takes you right to Chicago's newly redesigned Midway Airport. Hop on the train right inside the terminal, and you're downtown in minutes. No waiting, no cab fares, no crowds. For fun trip ideas to Chicago, go to ChooseChicago.com. For low fares, fly ATA Connection, an honestly different airline. Book your ticket now at ATA.com. Call 1-800-IFLY-ATA or your travel agent. Flint's Bishop International Airport, where I-75 and I-69 meet. You can get there from here.
A visit to the Arby's Kitchen with the Arby's Oven Mitt.
Hey, Ted, this chicken sandwich tastes great.
Well, that's because we make it with 100% all-natural white meat chicken, Oven Mitt.
Really?
Yeah, we now serve all of our chicken that way, unlike a lot of other places.
What do you mean?
Well, they still use altered chicken.
Altered?
You know, chicken that's been loaded with additives.
Ugh.
And pumped full of extra water.
Ugh.
And get this, Oven Mitt, sometimes the chickens are even injected with...
Oh, right, right, Ted. What part of don't talk about gross stuff when someone's trying to eat do you not understand?
Arby's introduces a breakthrough idea in great-tasting chicken. All chicken chicken. Now, all Arby's chicken sandwiches, salads, and wraps are made with only 100% all-natural white meat chicken. There's nothing added, nothing injected, and nothing altered.
Are you sure you don't want to hear about the chicken phosphate injection?
Okay, there goes my appetite.
Arby's all chicken chicken. 100% all-natural. 100% great taste. The way nature... are intended. Only at participating Arby's.
Can I take off the blindfold?
We're almost there.
This is so exciting. A surprise secret honeymoon.
You're going to love this.
You know, you owe me, Malcolm, because you kind of ruined the wedding.
I promise. This is going to be great.
Give me a hint.
Okay. International flair. Glamour. Glitz.
Oh, boy.
750 never-before-seen cars.
What?
Concept cars. European models.
Wait a minute. Where at?
Cobo Center for the North American International Auto Show. Ta-da!
Malcolm!
Every honeymoon minute spent amongst the magic and majesty of the North American International Auto Show. Every kind of fun imaginable.
Well, not every kind.
What?
You know.
Oh, tell you what, tomorrow night we'll leave the North American International Auto Show 15 minutes early.
15 minutes?
Oh, you're right. What am I thinking? 10 minutes. Come on, let's go. I'll race you in.
The North American International Auto Show starts this weekend. Brought to you by your Metro Detroit automobile dealers. This Saturday through January 23rd at Cobo Center in Detroit. Tickets at Cobo or Ticketmaster. Sponsored by Johnson Controls, Michelin, Denso, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, and Alpine Electronics of America.
Looking for cell phones in all the wrong places?
Excuse me, can I get some help here?
Tired of not getting the attention you deserve?
I've been standing here for 10 minutes.
Time to see the professionals, because anyone can sell phones. We are cell phones.
Welcome to Wireless Toys. Can I help you?
Come to Wireless Toys today and find out why we're one of the fastest growing wireless retail chains in the country. Some say it's because our experts know all the phones, all the packages, and all the deals. Others say it's because we have the largest variety of services at one location with Nextel, Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Singular Wireless. Then again, maybe it's because Wireless Toys has the lowest of low prices in the low price universe. Right now, at our lowest price ever, get a Motorola i830 color screen phone for free. Offer ends soon, so hurry in today to Wireless Toys. With 40 stores in the metro area, there's one near you. Or call us at 866-GET-TOYZ or go to wirelesstoys.com.
Wireless Toys!
For years, you've been hearing about Dr. Gregory Roche because he's not only an incredible cosmetic surgeon, he's someone you can trust to give you the utmost care and attention to any procedure that you choose. It can't be emphasized enough how important it is to trust the cosmetic surgeon that you choose. So whether it's getting rid of those annoying love handles or slimming down your waist and thighs, it's time for you to call Dr. Gregory Roche. With state-of-the-art laser-assisted ultrasonic liposuction, Dr. Roche will help you get back in shape so you can look and feel your best. Recovery time is relatively short, and many patients return to work after just a few days. Visit drroche.com today, then call to set up a consultation at 877-338-1110. Voted best plastic surgeon in Detroit by Our Magazine, Dr. Roche and his staff will be there for you every step of the way. That's 877-338-1110 for Dr. Roche.
Put your best face and body forward, Dr. Gregory Roche.
ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
This is Night Call. This is Night Call. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. The United States frequently declaring war, not on other nations, but on social problems. And, of course, now we're involved in a war on terror. How that's going is probably subject for another show. I would say we've lost the war on drugs, and one war that we've pretty much forgotten about was the war on poverty from the 1960s, when Lyndon Baines Johnson, President of the United States, declared that we were going to have a war on poverty. Well, how did things work out? I want to turn to an author that has just published a book that originally was in hardcover, now in paper, with a new epilogue. He is David K. Shipler, and David K. Shipler, I thought the name was familiar. Indeed, he worked for the New York Times from 1966 to 88, and reported from New York, Saigon, Moscow, and Jerusalem before serving as the chief diplomatic correspondent in Washington. He's written for a lot of other magazines and papers, the New Yorker, the Washington Post, and he has three other books. One, Russia, Broken Idols, Solemn Dreams. Another, Pulitzer Prize-winning Arab and Jew, Wounded Spirits in a Promised Land. And also, A Country of Strangers, Blacks and Whites in America, taking on some tough subjects every time. The new book, actually just out in paper, The Working Poor, Invisible in America. David K. Shipler, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
I noticed, and before I even started looking through your book, that you, in the first few pages, cite Michael Harrington's work from 1962, The Other America, where after a decade of what we thought was prosperity in the 1950s, Michael Harrington discovered that there were lots of poverty. There was lots of poverty in the United States. The working poor, invisible in America. Is it the same set of circumstances that was prevalent a generation ago?
Not exactly, in the sense that I think our perceptions have changed somewhat. That is, I think we now recognize that there's poverty, but often people who are poor are seen as people on welfare, and it's not commonly understood that hardworking people who hold full-time jobs but get very low wages are also poor. And despite how much they work, according to the American ethic, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. They are unable to pull themselves out of poverty or out of that zone that's very near poverty, and don't really improve their living standards by working.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was really startling and the success of your publicist that in the first sentence of the letter to the host, it said, the fastest growing segment of our workforce, according to a recent article in Business Week, is unable to support themselves. This is extraordinary.
It is. The economy does not work well for a whole segment of the population because the wages are so low and certain living expenses are so high. For example, housing costs have risen dramatically in most parts of the country to the point where some families are paying 50, 60, 70% of their income for rent. That doesn't leave a lot for food. I mean, you have to pay the rent. You have to pay the electricity. Most places you have to have a car to get to work, so you need to make those car payments and pay car insurance and so forth. And the one part of the budget that is most easily squeezable is food, which means that you're seeing links and connections between different problems. That is housing costs on the one hand and malnutrition on the other. It's a very serious problem.
Now, in some of your other books where you began looking at the problem of Israel and Palestine and black and white, those things are issues that usually smack us right in the face. Yet there is, in fact, that's your subtitle, Invisible in America. Was there anything particular that said, wait a minute, there's a story here that I can tell, and I'm going to tell it. What was the genesis of this?
Well, I wanted to take out of the equation of poverty the moral issue, because this is a country that has an American dream that basically holds that if you do work hard, you'll get ahead. So, and if you're not getting ahead, then the implication is that there's something wrong with you. You haven't been working hard. And that's a myth, and it's a dream, and it's an important myth, actually. It holds us to a very high standard, which means that the gap between the standard and the reality is one that we yearn to close. But it often also leads, especially on the political right, to condemnation of those who are poor as suffering from their own failures. So I think it was important to me to take out of that equation as much as I could the moral part of it and look at work, and look at the kinds of jobs people had, go into families, spend a lot of time with them. I did the research over about 5 years, and I went back to the same people again and again and again. Not all the people in the book are people I watched or followed for 5 years, but quite a few of them are. And what I found was that it was very difficult to subscribe either to the liberal view solely that the society is completely at fault, or to the conservative view that the individual is completely at fault. It actually looked to me like a combination of factors where it was very difficult to find a family that did not suffer from bad decisions and, you know, bad behaviors, let's say, you know, mistakes that they made along the way, you know, getting pregnant when you're in high school, dropping out of school, not showing up on time for work and that sort of thing. But it was also very difficult to find people whose behavior was not somehow inherited from a legacy of being poorly parented, poorly schooled, poorly housed in neighborhoods where the horizons of possibility seem very close at hand, and where children find it hard as they get older to imagine themselves in a different life. Mm-hmm. So this I was just going to add that there's a sense of hopelessness there, a sense of powerlessness about a lot of folks I encountered, in which they don't often see that it's, you know, that they have any ability to make choices that are going to lead to different outcomes. And that's a serious problem.
Sure. You know actually, although what you just answered was very instructive, but I was curious how, when you talk about invisible in America, the working poor, what led you, David Shipler, to say, wait a minute, There's something here. There's a story. How did this get into your brain that this was a phenomenon?
Well, I think first of all, I started my newspaper career at the New York Times in New York, covering housing during the war on poverty, and housing is an issue that takes you into many different aspects of society. You know, you learn about politics, you learn about landlords, you learn about labor unions and deep poverty, drug addiction, and all of that. And so the idea of writing something about this problem has been percolating for a long time. When I spent many years overseas, and after I came back, I continued to write about American foreign policy and so forth. And then I began to feel that was too vicarious. I really wanted to immerse myself in the country where I was living, which was my own country. So I thought, oh, I ought to tackle some of the most vexing problems that we face. And the first one I looked at was race relations, which is a fascinating and difficult issue. And so I wrote A Country of Strangers, Blacks and Whites in America. And that led pretty naturally to a desire to look at poverty as another vexing problem that we have, and especially people who are working, because I began to realize that, you know, the fruits of their labor are in our lives every day, you know, And yet we don't often see them. We don't recognize people who have jobs as poor because having a job is a kind of camouflage. It, it helps people blend in. It makes us think, well, they're okay. You know, the cashier at the Walmart or the guy behind the counter at McDonald's or the man who washes cars but doesn't own one, you know, and the woman who files canceled checks in the back room of a bank but at one time had $2.02 in her own checking account. And I actually encountered an example of the invisibility by listening to NPR one day a few years ago, and there was a very witty commentary by a guy who was outraged at how much he had to pay for a bag of popcorn at the movie theater. So he did a little research to figure out what profit the theater was making, and he calculated how much the popcorn cost and how much the butter cost and what the price of the bag was, and he even threw in a little electricity and so forth. And he added those up and found out that, you know, for a $5 bag of popcorn or something, the theater was making more than $4 profit. Well, he forgot the people.
Sure.
The people who popped the corn, filled the bag, handed him the bag, took his money. Now, their wages were so low that they would not have contradicted his thesis, but he didn't see them. And NPR editors didn't see them when they edited his commentary. And I thought that was quite significant. Yeah. They just disappear from our consciousness very often.
You mentioned a number of people as examples, and I was thinking as you were saying that, that I once asked an anthropologist, how did the people that you were living with in the South American jungle feel about being studied? I mean, did they, well, you know, they sense that that you've come from this wealthy country to the north that they couldn't even visualize. These were tribal people. And he said, you know, I don't know, which I thought was strange. But I suspect, David Shipler, though, you may have a better idea of how did people relate. I assume everybody you named were actual people?
Or? All the people in the book are real people. I absolutely oppose this device of using composite characters. I would never do it. I don't think it makes any sense. The reality is strong enough. You don't have to put, you know, people together fictitiously. No, every single person in the book is real, and in most cases, almost all cases, they allowed me to use their real names. There were a few folks who asked that I not use their real names, so I made it clear in the book that they are pseudonyms, either by using only their first names or putting a pseudonym in parentheses or in quotation marks, something like that. But the folks I interviewed were almost all very forthcoming, I thought. First of all, it was unusual, I think, in their experience, for anyone to sit down at their kitchen tables and ask them questions about their own lives. By and large, the folks I spent time with were not introspective particularly. They were not used to talking about themselves. They were not accustomed to anyone being particularly interested in how they lived. And I got feedback from some people indicating that they enjoy it. And they enjoyed, of course, you know, everyone's favorite subject is himself. So every reporter knows that. So if you're asking people about themselves, you're pushing on an open door. There were a couple of folks who were, after the first one or two meetings, seemed always to be busy and not able to make an appointment with me. And I kind of got the message there that they didn't want to continue. And I may have been misreading it. You know, these folks are very busy. They have very hectic lives, working multiple jobs, taking care of kids and all that. So, but I backed off in those cases. So
what did you tell them you were doing?
Well, I told them exactly what I was doing. I told them I was doing a book about poverty and about people who were working at low wages. And, you know, to write about real people these days, you need to have them sign releases. You can't just invade people's lives and write about them unless they give you permission. So the release spelled out quite clearly what I was doing, and those who were willing to cooperate sign releases.
Did they express any shame or embarrassment or humiliation about the fact that they were the poor? I mean, the word has such a stigma to it.
Well, people react differently to that word. There were some who did not consider themselves poor because they had good family situations and regarded that as a source of richness. There were others who acknowledged their poverty. What struck me most, rather than whether they subscribed to that particular word or not, was the fact that almost none of them blamed any system or set of circumstances other than themselves. That is, they, you know, when you try to get to the sources of these problems, you would often hear people say, "I'm lazy. I dropped out of school. I didn't, you know, do this or didn't do that." It was as if, and in fact, I was quite stunned when people said they were lazy, because these folks were really working hard and long hours and leading complicated lives and struggling to make ends meet. They didn't strike me as lazy in the least.
Well, don't they strike you like they've inculcated the conservative view of
poverty? Well, I think
poverty?
I think you put your finger on it. I think they've internalized the larger societies, and especially the conservative view that, you know, if you don't get ahead, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And money is an index of success in this country, and when you don't have much of it, it looks as if you failed. Now, there were some people who had a little larger view, but not a lot larger. You know, by and large, I didn't get from folks it should be easier to form labor unions. The private enterprise system, is really inadequate. The politicians, you do hear sometimes the politicians don't care about us,
mm-hmm.
and that's one reason that people of low income tend not to vote in large numbers. But by and large, whatever rage people felt, they misdirected, I thought, against their spouses or partners, their children, the school teacher of their kids, maybe sometimes their bosses for not giving them a raise or a promotion. That was about as far away from them as their rage extended in most cases.
The book is The Working Poor, Invisible in America. It has a new epilogue. It's in paper now. The author, David K. Shipler, is with us. It's published by Vintage, available in paperback now. It'll be on my website, a link to it, peterwerby.com. Your previous book, as you said, was about relationships between black and white, Country of Strangers. Among poor African Americans, was there more of a sense that they were poor because of structural problems as opposed to individual failings?
I didn't get that, actually. It was quite interesting. Because a lot of the people I interviewed for my book on race were not in deep poverty, because I was focusing on stereotypes across racial lines. So I was looking for African-Americans and whites who were in mixed race situations. Many poor I interviewed for this book live in all black neighborhoods, and their kids go to virtually all black schools. Now, once in a while, you know, people would talk about racial stereotyping and prejudice as a factor. Sometimes it came through as tensions not between blacks and whites, but between blacks and Latinos, people at the same occupational level. One business owner I spoke with, I did spend quite a lot of time talking to employers to see how this all looked from their perspective. And I remember a couple of them telling me there were a lot of racial problems, lots of racial tension in their factories. These were guys who owned factories. Well, one owned a factory, one ran a factory as the manager. When I asked them a bit about that, it turned out that they had almost no black supervisors. The blacks were all in the lower level jobs, and the supervisors were almost all white. And I asked them why, and they kind of looked puzzled and obviously hadn't even thought about it before, but it was clearly an issue. So it's there. I think that I also picked up a lot of concern among women about discrimination on the basis of gender or on age discrimination. There's one person I wrote about quite a lot named Caroline Payne. Worked at Walmart for a while and never got promoted, even though she was promised that she would be made a department head at some point.
Yeah.
I think there were a couple of reasons for that. One is that she said, you know, the men were getting paid more, and you know there's a class action suit. She's not involved in it, but there is a class action suit on this now pending against Walmart by women. The other is that Caroline didn't have dental insurance, and her teeth decayed, and she had to have them pulled, and she got dentures paid by Medicaid that didn't fit her, and she couldn't wear them. So she didn't have teeth. And in America, where that 1,000-watt smile is so highly prized, I think that hurt her, actually. I think that she wasn't seen as quite good enough to be, you know, in contact with customers and supervising other employees.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you know in history, the old industrial workers of the world, the so-called Wobblies, 100th anniversary of the union that still exists, and their preamble says the working class and the employing class have nothing in common. Yet we think we've in many ways overcome that, that class warfare view of the world. However, it still seems certainly that employers see our labor simply as an element of production that is, that has a variable cost. In other words, that they can either go up or down. Are people in unions? Are there a lot of people out there with simple skills? What have you? So I guess I'm wondering within that. Within that context, which I'm not sure quite what it is, how did employers look at people that they knew they were paying wages that weren't good enough to take them out of poverty?
Well, one interesting discovery I made was that employers seem to feel that there is an appropriate wage for a particular job and that thou shalt not deviate from that wage. When I asked employers if they could pay, you know, $8 or $9 an hour instead of $7 for certain starting jobs, you know, they'd say, well, it wouldn't be, that wouldn't be right. You know, it wouldn't, it's not appropriate. It's not, you know, it just would be out of, everything would be out of whack. One woman who owns a fashion design and manufacturing company in Los Angeles, who actually pays her people fairly decently, said that if she raised those on the lower end, she'd have to raise everyone else above them. And I found this interesting because it's the disparity between wages that I think has been given a lot of attention in this country, and yet it seems to be an article of faith, at least in the businesses I looked at, that that disparity is entirely proper and even mandated, that you can't really collapse the wage structure very much because the people who have gone to college and have, you know, or in positions of management will be, you know, quite offended if they're making only a few dollars more an hour than the secretary or the guy who works in the warehouse. And I think that unionization would solve that. And, you know, the percentage of workers in the United States in labor unions has dropped precipitously from, I think it was about 35% in the 50s and 60s, down to just 13% now.
Yeah, and even lower, I think, in the private sector.
In the private sector, it's just 9%, I think. Mm-hmm. And one reason for that is that federal laws really do not punish employers for intimidation or threats or sanctions against workers who try to organize. And it's very difficult to organize a labor union. So it's, or, you know, you organize workers into a union in a particular place. I mean, people have been trying to do Walmart for a while, and I think they may succeed eventually, but it'll be a long haul, and it's a difficult one. And the other problem is a lot of the folks I met didn't stay in jobs very long. They did not have a sense that longevity would work to their advantage. They believe that moving from place to place would be, you know, they get another 50 cents an hour at another job, then that's a good thing to do, or they, you know, the hours might be a little better there than where they're working. And longevity is not a virtue in their sense. And the other thing I heard from employers a lot about workers who don't show up on time, don't call when they're coming, you know, now I'm not going to be there, they're out sick or whatnot. And it's interesting, I put this complaint to a woman who grew up in the middle class but then fell into poverty after a divorce, so she has a certain perspective on poverty. I told her what I was hearing from employers about this. She said a very interesting thing, and I think it was very perceptive. She said, maybe people don't think they're important enough for anybody to care if they come to work or not. And I think she's absolutely right. I put that one back. I took that one back to some employers, and some of them nodded their heads and said, yeah, absolutely right. And one guy who is the third generation of a family that owns a small manufacturing company in Cleveland told me that if somebody doesn't show up, and he'll call them up at home, and he'll say, what's up? And if the guy says, well, my car broke down, he'll send somebody to pick him up and bring him in, because he wants him to understand that if he doesn't come in, a production deadline might be missed, or he'll have to pull people off another job. So I felt a lot of the folks who had were in these low-wage jobs had failed repeatedly. They'd failed in school, they'd failed in relationships, they'd failed in job after job, and they really don't believe in themselves. They don't think anybody cares about them. They don't think they're important. The word entitlement, which is used in Congress to describe the government programs that these folks are eligible for, I never heard from any of these folks. These folks seem to feel less entitled than anybody I've encountered in this country. Certainly less than the Princeton students I taught a few years ago when I did a semester there. So they don't feel that they are owed very much, for most part. I mean, you do find people who can work the system pretty well and get the benefits, but they don't apply for benefits they're eligible for very often because it's a hassle and the bureaucracy is a pain and the receptionist is rude and all the rest of it. It's a very difficult life to try to combine a low wage with the government benefits such as food stamps or housing subsidies to survive decently.
Yeah. The book is The Working Poor, Invisible in America. It's in paper now with a new epilogue. The author, David K. Shipler, has been my guest. It's available from Vintage Publishers, and more on it with a link on my website, peterwerby.com. David Shipler, thanks for joining me on the program.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Peter.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back with another guest right after this.
Hi, it's Judy with David Hall from Rye Financial. Dave, it seems like, can I call you Dave?
Yeah, call me Dave.
It seems like Rye Financial has been growing all year long. You're hiring now, though, too.
We're looking for the best of the best, and we're very proud of the fact that we were voted the 13th best place to work in America and the number one best place to work in Metro Detroit.
Wow, that's because of you, right?
No, nothing to do with me, but it's something we're very proud of. We've got 2,300 mortgage experts now, and we're still growing. Locations Livonia, Troy, Farmington Hills, Auburn Hills, and Dearborn. And we're going to continue to grow this thing right here in Metro Detroit. We're looking for folks that are energetic, enthusiastic, committed, and most of all, passionate, because we're excited about our business.
Oh, well, more information, you can call. That's your cue.
Oh, I never read the script. I just go off the top of my head. 866-JOBS-200 or go to rockfinancialcareers.com.
Join Rock Financial at their sales career open house Tuesday, January 11th. Events will be held both in the Livonia and Troy locations. You must register to attend at rockfinancial.com and click on careers. Registration and the event are free.
Could be down in the tropics with my toes in the sand. Need an apple vacation, frosty drink in my hand. I got to get me to the sunshine blues.
Don't be blue. The Apple Vacations Winter Relief Sale is on. Do Oahu and enjoy 5 nights at Ohana Maile Sky Court from just $7.19, including air, a free night, and more. Or make it the Radisson Waikiki Prince Kohio for 5 nights from only $8.99, including air. This year, discover Oahu, the heart of Hawaii. Call the travel professionals at Passageways Travel at 888-532-0420. That's Passageways Travel, 888-532-0420. Hurry, best flights and hotels going fast.
I got the candy to the sunshine blue.
Prices per person based on double occupancy, including air on Delta for select dates. $2.50 per segment, September 11 security fee and other taxes and fees up to $55 not included. Restrictions apply.
Janine Heilman with Cosmetic Surgery Associates and Mike Heilman of Hair Loss Treatment Centers with a word on honesty.
You've heard and seen the offers on radio and TV.
You're eligible for a free body makeover. We're conducting a test and you could qualify. You'll get a full head of hair free.
Here's the part you don't hear.
Babe spilled Freud and Hair Replacement Emporium. What you need done?
I'm calling about the free body makeover and a free hair transplant for my husband.
Look, baby, you're too beautiful for the free test.
Too beautiful, but...
You don't qualify, but we got a great deal for you on liposuction. We take it from your rear and put it over here.
Remember, nothing in life is free.
At Cosmetic Surgery Associates and Hair Loss Treatment Centers, our professional staff will give you the highest quality care.
And you'll get the results you're looking for at a fair, honest price.
Don't trust just anyone with your body, appearance, or health.
Tell them about our free consultation.
Not funny, Mike.
Call Cosmetic Surgery Associates, 1-800-NEW-IMAGE. That's 1-800-NEW-IMAGE. Or Hair Loss Treatment Centers, 1-800-I-WANT-HAIR. That's 1-800-I-WANT-HAIR.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving? moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Do you feel tense, edgy, and irritable? Are you under so much pressure you feel like you can never relax? Now there's a way to relax, mellow out, and feel high on life without drugs or alcohol. It's called Elatrin, the soothing natural herbal blend that gives you a calm, relaxed feeling of euphoria without a hangover or other unpleasant side effects. Elatrin helps lift tension and pressure and lets you feel worry-free, carefree, the way you feel when everything's going your way. Elatrin is non-habit-forming and helps relieve anxiety and irritability so you can feel happy. Think clearly, relax, and be high on life. Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of Elatrin.
1-800-246-1758. 1-800-246-1758.
Elatrin is guaranteed to work for you or your money back.
1-800-246-1758. 1-800-246-1758.
Individual results will vary.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more with your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Many of you may remember the interview I did with a traveler to Haiti. That was just a few weeks ago. And I said I was probably much like the rest of the audience, that I knew very, very little about Haiti and all the politics. I knew it was a mess. I knew that the United States had intervened in a manner that was not helpful to the political process or to the democratic process in Haiti. But I was much like the audience, that I was coming in with fairly a blank slate. We're going to talk about a subject that in some ways that I'm overprepared for, to the point where it's almost left me at the same point of confusion that I entered the Haiti conversation. But I think we're going to come out of it with some understanding. And it's about Social Security, the proposed benefit cuts and privatization that George W. Bush is suggesting as a way, as he says in a radio address a few weeks ago, the system, meaning Social Security, is headed towards bankruptcy down the road. He says if we do not act soon, Social Security will not be there for our children and grandchildren. So he's saying that even for his twins, it may not be there. This is echoed pretty much in the mainstream media. They all pick that up. Social Security reform, Social Security in danger, and what have you. Joining me now is someone who's been on the Peter Werby Show before, Dean Baker. He is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. We're talking with him at his office. Dean Baker, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so here we got El Presidente says, it's just like the mushroom cloud deal with Iraq. We don't act soon. It's going to, not going to be anything there for our kids. And you put out this position paper. Point number one, Social Security is financially sound. There's a gulf here.
Yeah, well, I think, as you said, it's just like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The president is saying things here that are not true. What I've always done, I wrote the book Social Security, The Phony Crisis. What I've always done in this debate is I've been relying on the official projections, the same numbers that everyone else in the debate is relying on, and just trying to tell people what those numbers show. So the numbers that, are the center of the debate, the Social Security trustees put out a report every year. And what that tells us is that if, we put the program on autopilot, we forget about everything, don't do a thing, every penny of scheduled benefits is paid through the year 2042. I think that may not be quite enough for the president's twins, but that gets through many of our retirements at least. Now, sure. What happens after 2042, of course, we'd be very concerned if it goes off a cliff and there's nothing there. That's not true. What happens after 2042, if we go through this whole period and we've never do anything and the program follows exactly the projected course, then we'd have enough to pay about 70% of scheduled benefits, not the full scheduled benefits in current law, but about 70%. And that would be an amount that's actually larger than what a retiree gets today on average. And this is after you adjust for inflation. So what does this mean if we go to 2045, 2050, 2060? We never do anything. We're not going to be able to, we won't have enough money to pay the full scheduled benefits, but people would always get a larger benefit than what current retirees are getting today. So this idea that it's going off a cliff and the president's twins or their kids aren't going to get it, well, no, not unless we let Congress dismantle it. There's simply not a story you could tell that it won't be there.
Hmm. Now, I'm sure there must be some listeners thinking, how can this be if Peter's guest said, well, there are some deep problems and it's not quite as bad as the president said, but it's so black and white. I mean, this is a manufactured crisis?
I would say absolutely. I mean, I've had arguments with people where you can get into semantics. Do you want to call it a crisis because if we don't do anything, you can't pay full scheduled benefit in, 38 years? Well, if people want to call that a crisis, that's fine. But by that standard, we have a crisis in our roads, our schools, our healthcare system. There's a lot of other problems that are more pressing and urgent, than that. So I don't care about the semantics. If people want to call it a crisis and say everything we face is a crisis, if that makes them feel good, that's fine. But the basic numbers, I know everyone in the debate pretty much because I've been arguing this for more than a decade, and no one would dispute those numbers. I mean, they might flap their arms and go, oh, my God, and in just 38 years we'd only be able to, pay 70% of scheduled benefits. You could say it that way. But the basic point, yes, we could pay 70% scheduled benefits, and that, in fact, is more than what a typical retiree gets today. No one could dispute that.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bush has said, as I quoted earlier in his weekly radio address, he didn't say there's going to be problems. He didn't say we're going to pay 70%. He said the system is headed towards bankruptcy down the road. This was not an off-the-cuff remark. This is a scripted speech that he gave and obviously headed off towards policy decisions. So where is this all coming from?
Social Security is an incredibly popular system. I mean, it's bipartisan. The vast majority of Republicans say they think it's a good program. So it's not, this isn't something that, red and blue America, blue America likes it, everyone likes Social Security. The fact of the matter is the vast majority of the population is currently or is going to depend on Social Security for a large segment of their retirement income, if not the vast majority, in some cases their whole retirement income. During their working lifetime, it provides disability insurance. We have roughly 10 million people getting disability insurance from Social Security. A lot of kids when they're growing up, they had a parent who died at an early age. It supported them in their childhood. It's a hugely popular program. It's very efficient. It's the administrative costs are, if we compare it, a lot of these people are running around talking about the Chilean system, that's their model. Chile has a privatized system. The administrative costs of our system are about 1/20th or 1/30th of the administrative costs of the Chilean system. So it's very efficient. There's also very few cases of fraud. It's a simple system, but you just don't have that many cases where you have people giving phony numbers or collecting benefits they're not entitled to. So it's an incredibly popular system. So if you're out there and you say, well, I want to privatize it, and people thought the program was in fine shape. Everyone said, well, it was a healthy program, and George W. Bush was out there saying, well, I know it's healthy, but I have something better. And he'd be chased out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that they'll ever get taken seriously in their efforts to try and privatize Social Security is by first convincing people that it's going under. And there's accounts, some of them basically said exactly as much pretty much in public. I mean, they don't make a secret about it. They have tried very hard over the last two decades and with considerable success to convince people that this program's on the edge of bankruptcy. And, in that context, if people go up to you and go, well, do you want Social Security that's not going to be there, or do you want a private account? Well, private account sounds good by comparison. But, if people know the truth and they know, look, the program's basically fine, somewhere down the road we'll probably want to do something. We could talk about what that might be. But, for the foreseeable future, it's fine. And even long-distance future, it's not like it goes off a cliff. Privatization would be nowhere. So you really have to build up this fear. And I give them credit. They've been very successful in doing it.
Well, they've had a compliant media in doing it. Dean Baker is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And there is a position paper put out by the organization, by Dean Baker and David Rosnick, called Basic Facts on Social Security and Proposed Benefit Cuts and Privatization. It's at CEPR.net. That's correct, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only motives that that I can ascribe then to Bush and his pals is that that they want to just get all this money for their you know, fees for their friends on Wall Street. Is it that crass?
Well, I mean, I don't know him, so I don't know exactly what his motives are. But it is clear that, you know, if Wall Street got their hands on Social Security money, they would make a fortune on the fees and commissions. You know, under some scenarios, if you imagined, you know, let's say half the money going to Social Security that currently is paid in taxes goes into private accounts. That's more than is likely to be the case, but let's say they got half of it. You can easily imagine a scenario in which the fees and commissions going to the financial industry run into the tens of billions on an annual basis. So, wow. You know, this would be real money. So, you know, certainly, you know, and also it's not a secret that, you know, the financial industry overwhelmingly supported President Bush's reelection. So, you know, those two things we could say for certain. Whether that's his motivation, you know, I don't know. But, you know, that much we know. It's also clear there is an ideological issue here in the sense that if you don't like government social programs, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of conservatives that don't. They didn't like Social Security when President Roosevelt created it back in the 30s. They didn't like it in the 60s. They don't like it today. If you don't like government social programs, well, Social Security is the granddaddy of them all. So, you know, if you can get rid of it, you know, that's a big advance if that's where you're coming from.
Well, I have people that I talk to that say, hey, this is a great idea. We could continue paying people benefits. But, I'm 26 years old, and if I just put in like $30 a month, by the time I'm 65, I'd have $14 million. So on the face of it, that seems very attractive to people, as you said earlier, way beyond any ideological divide.
Yeah, you know, this is something that they've been getting away with in this debate. Basically, they've just been making up numbers about the stock returns people can get. So the idea was, you know, you put your money in the stock market and it goes up year by year, and they're assuming rates of return, rates at which, you know, stock prices will rise. They're literally impossible. I mean, I was arguing with these people back in the 90s, and I should point out all these people were saying that back in the 90s, just put your money in the internet bubble and just keep going up and up and up. You know, somehow there's an interesting phenomena that I, you know, if I ever get a chance, I'd love to write on that. You know, when you think of someone doing a more menial job, you know, a custodian, if they don't clean the toilet, they get fired. You know, the waitress messes up the order, they get fired. You know, the bus driver, you know, is an accident, they get fired. You know, people lower down the ladder, they're held accountable for their work. But when you're at the top, when you're an economist, you're a Wall Street economist or a stock broker or whatever, you know, making your forecast, and you're completely wrong. Imagine missing the stock bubble. You had to be a moron. If you're a professional investor and you missed the stock bubble, I'm sorry, you're an idiot. But most of them did, and they're all still there. None of them lost their jobs. So they're still pushing phony numbers on the stock market, and I've been going around. I debate these people all the time, and I just say, you know, if you think you can get these returns, just write it down for me. Stock returns come from dividends, and they come from an increase in the stock price. That's the only place they come from. Write it down for me. No one will do it because they know the numbers they put down are obviously ridiculous. And I just go around harassing them. I go, this is the arithmetic we all learned in third grade. You went to third grade, didn't you?
I'll just tell you a real quick story. In the late 90s, when I was trying to figure out what to do with this 401k, this tax attorney of mine said, put it all in tech stocks. It's growing incredibly. I almost said it. I shouldn't say his name. I was just almost did. I said, these companies aren't making any profit. Isn't this kind of just a, I can't remember what I said. You know, isn't this all going to just, you know, break? And he said, oh, no, it's going to go on forever. And he lost about $4 million, and I just kept it in this real conservative stuff. And so I thought, wait a minute. Why? How come I'm not doing, you know, we ought to be switching roles or something like that? For sure. All right, back to Social Security and the idea that if you put money, that accounts are privatized and even at the best, let's even grant them, if you will, for the sake of argument, Dean Baker, that you could take money from Social Security, put it in private investment accounts. Now, so in however many years I retire, and suddenly though, these younger folks that are supposed to be paying for me, where's my Social Security going to come from?
Well, this is again one of the big problems with their proposal. The story that they're talking about is we're simply going to borrow, you know.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, no, and it's really kind of incredible because, you know, as we all know, we have pretty large deficits, and I'm not balanced the budget, you know, I'm not a nut about deficits, you know. Sometimes it's okay to run a deficit, and, you know, you can run a large deficit for a year or two, that's not a catastrophe, but, you know, we do have very large deficits now, and, you know, he's talking about taking current deficits on the order of $400 billion and raising them by around $150, $200 billion. So we'd be looking at annual deficits on the order of $550, maybe $600 billion. And that would be for the foreseeable future. So it's not, you know, we could do that for a year, no doubt about it. But can we do that for 5 years, 10 years?
When you say we're borrowing, remind people who is loaning us, you and me, and the government, and hence you and I, who have to pay off the debt plus the interest on it. Who's loaning us this money?
Well, right now a lot of it's coming from foreign central banks. So a lot of the bonds that we're selling to finance the deficit at the moment are coming from the central banks in Japan and China, Thailand. A lot of the Asian central banks are actually the ones lending the money. Which, you know, should provide grounds for concern, not just the political issue, which, you know, grant could become a political issue, but also it means this isn't a market consideration. We don't have people, you know, from around the world buying U.S. government bonds because they think they're a good investment right now. You have, you know, the Japanese and Chinese central bank that buy off U.S. government bonds basically because they're trying to keep the U.S. dollar from falling. So that makes it a very, very unstable situation, and it'll just become much more unstable if we increase our borrowing by $150, $200 billion a year.
Now, doesn't that even cut into whatever kind of return we would be expecting on these privatized accounts, that we also have to figure out that we're each of us are paying back to some extent the interest on the debt run up to borrow to pay Social Security?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of this stuff is game playing. So they go, oh, look at the great return you'll get on your account. And even there, they're not being honest with their numbers. But that aside the point, fine, let's say you get a good return on the account, you know, but on the other hand, we're going to have to pay, maybe we don't raise taxes today, but at some point in the future, we're going to be paying higher taxes to repay this money we borrowed, and what's our return on that? It's minus 100%, because obviously the money that we pay to taxes to cover our debt, we don't get one penny of return on. So every cent of that is money simply out of our pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't a free lunch here, and they're trying to sell everyone that, and, you know, the bottom line is there is no free lunch. In fact, at the end of the day, it can't help but being negative because you have the extra administrative costs of dealing with these accounts.
Dean Baker, maybe you should just go over just a little bit, because what you said in just one clause is extraordinarily important, and that is the reason that the central banks of these foreign governments are buying U.S. bonds, treasury bonds, it's not because they think we're a good investment, which is pretty frightening in and of itself, but to strengthen the dollar. That's what is so incredibly difficult for people to get their brains around, including me.
Yeah, no, it's a very unusual circumstance. What you have right now is, you know, the U.S. is the largest consumer market in the world, and particularly for the countries in East Asia, China, Japan, Thailand, many of the other countries, India, we're buying lots of their exports. And in order to keep us buying their exports, they want to keep the dollar high against their currencies, because if the dollar fell, then suddenly the clothes that are produced in China, the shoes, you know, the software we get from India, all those will rise in price for people in the United States. Might still buy a lot of them, but we would certainly buy less. So in order to keep us buying lots of their exports, they want to keep the dollar high against their currency. And the way they do that is they buy up U.S. government bonds. That's what keeps the dollar high against their currency. So right now, that's what's keeping the dollar where it is, keeping interest rates relatively low, is Japan's central bank, China's central bank, other central banks are buying up hundreds of billions of dollars a year with the explicit intention of keeping the dollar high.
But on the other hand, the Bush administration is trying to let the dollar drop in value.
Well, It seems that they're doing that. It's not clear that they can prevent it from dropping in value. I frankly think it's something that they should have done a long time ago. And, in fact, I'll trace this back to the Clinton administration. I think it was a huge, huge mistake that the Clinton administration back in 1996 consciously pursued a high dollar policy. That was a very, very bad mistake, which had to be reversed, because the problem with the high dollar policy is it makes the imports very cheap. So you do start to buy all these goods from China, and it makes our exports very expensive. So people in Europe, people in Japan, they don't buy goods produced in the United States. So we really couldn't sustain the high dollar policy that began in the Clinton administration and has been largely continued under Bush, although he's now retreating from it. But that was the mistake, was to ever let the dollar get as high as it got in the mid and late 90s.
Dean Baker is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, their website, CEPR.net. And I always fear, you know, this is like, what do they call it? Economics, the dismal science. Well, folks, this is about our lives, how much, return we get for the labor we expend. And in many ways, it is the central core issue of what drives everything else. Dean Baker, do you remember R. Crumb, the cartoonist, and his character, Mr. Natural?
Absolutely, I remember him well.
Well, here's what I remember him saying. Is this a system? I mean, isn't there any way to run this? It sounds like, for one thing, the average person, even with your help, and it's extraordinarily, you're making it extraordinarily more clear, it's still, the average person, I'm sure, must just feel, if not at an absolute loss to understand it, certainly at an absolute loss to be able to affect it.
Yeah, no, it's scary, and I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have our center, is we try to make these things understandable. I understand we're just a drop in the bucket, but, we do what we can to make information available. We also try to work on the reporters that cover this for the media, because that is where most people are going to get the news, shows like yours, but more often, they're watching, NBC, ABC, the evening news shows. And, if those people don't get the stories right, as often they don't, then it's very, very difficult for, a typical person out across the country to really understand these issues and know how they could do anything about them.
Well, why isn't the media a little more even-handed? I mean, I know that's kind of a joke given what we've seen over the last 4 years particularly, but they were burned on Iraq. They went completely along, essentially, as the propaganda arm of the government. They found out that they were passing along bad information to the point where the New York Times and the Washington Post apologized. Although I have to say, and you probably saw the New York Times editorial today, they certainly reflect what you're saying. But why doesn't most media understand they were burned once?
I really can't answer that. I mean, I know a lot of the reporters, a lot of it is that people are, this came up with Iraq. They're very hesitant when you have the President of the United States say something. In this case, what you began the show with, he says that Social Security is on the edge of bankruptcy. They feel they can't just say, well, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So because he said that, it has to be treated as, well, that's one side in the debate. So no matter, if he gets up in the middle of January and says, it's a beautiful, hot, sunny day when, it's below freezing and there's snow on the ground, they still have to say, well, the president says it's a beautiful, hot, sunny day. They can't.
Well, but what they could do, obviously, is say critics like Dean Baker of the Senate, of your group, said blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. Well, listen, we only have a short amount of time, and I'm maybe not directing this as well as I should we were talking about possible solutions. Kevin from St. Mary's, Ohio, wrote in saying Bush could solve the Social Security problem once and for all if he removed the cap on salaries. If you earn over $87,500, the payroll tax cap comes in. So people that are making $50 million a year only pay on $87,500.
That's right. And that's certainly, one big problem with the program that, in fact, if you did remove the cap altogether, you'd have almost enough money, not quite, to keep the program solvent for its 75-year planning horizon. You go very, very far out, 2070 or 73, you'd have to check. One of the problems that's made the finance of the program worse is that there's been so much income shifted upward in the last 20 years that much more income has fallen over the cap. So if we go back to the Greenspan Commission, which was the last group that changed Social Security, Security in 83, that's Alan Greenspan's work, they set the cap at a level where 90% of wage income was subject to the tax. Today it's only 85%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just to go back to 90%, then you could reduce the shortfall. We have a 75-year planning horizon for the program, so you could reduce the shortfall over that planning horizon by about a quarter. So a very large part of the shortfall is simply due to the fact that more wage income has gone to high-end wage earners instead of typical workers.
You know, Dean Baker, when I told my wife I was doing an interview on this subject, she said, well, ask him what we should, you know, she had this whole list of questions, like you were a financial advisor. And I said, I don't think that's where we're going with it. We're essentially going to look at the politics of it all. But is there, I mean, that gets back to what I was saying, that sense of helplessness that individuals have. I know nothing can be guaranteed, but what direction should individuals be moving in if they want to secure their future?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the program, I mean, the program's far from lost. It has huge support, and, you know, if I had to place a bet on this, if I had the choice of 50-50 bet, I'd bet it's going to be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think people have to make their voices heard. That, you know, means, oh, it's worth a while calling your member of Congress. A lot of your listeners are probably in AARP. They've taken a good stand on this. They have to be encouraged to stick to that stand because they're very, very important in this debate. Also, you know, we're talking about the media. They have letters to the editor. You can write to reporters. We have a lot of material on our website. We talk very specifically. I actually do an analysis of the economic reporting in the New York Times and Washington Post. A lot of that is transferable to other newspapers. You know, talk to these people. When they say something that isn't true, you know, you could let them know. And I don't expect everyone to, you know, become a policy nerd, but, you know, we try to make stuff accessible to people, and sometimes it's very clear when they say something, it's wrong, and, you know, reporters have to be called on that, and many of them will be honest enough, and they'll change.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us. My guest has been Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and you can go to their website, cepr.net, and there is this paper by Dean Baker and David Rosnick that called Basic Facts on Social Security and the Proposed Benefit Cuts and Privatization that I think will give you a good understanding of what we're facing. Dean Baker, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Peter.
Thank you for tuning in to the RIFS Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werbe. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means